Okay, good afternoon. I'll call to order meeting the Conference Committee of Senate File 2082. We don't yet have a quorum present, but we'll get started hearing some testimony. As we've indicated for the past 2 days, we wanted to hear, review the e-licensing proposal, and it starts on page R57 of our side-by-side comparison. As we heard yesterday afternoon from Mr. Lawley, apparently there have been some discussions going on between the interested groups and OET about what to do. We've got some draft language here that apparently Senate Council and House Council haven't seen. They have not had an opportunity really to go through it thoroughly, so we're interested in hearing, you know, from the interested parties. We do have to make a decision on this one, and obviously for the overall e-licensing thing, I think the House and Senate are fairly close to most issues, but the thing that's been holding us up, obviously, are the groups that already have their own system and are having concerns about having to pay for the system that they've got plus the e-licensing system. And so we want to finally resolve this issue and move forward on it. So can we have somebody from OET come forward, and then if there's any other groups who are interested, parties who want to testify on this, we need to hear them. Now is your chance, because we're going to be taking a vote, and I don't want any more emails or complaints once this thing gets moving. So welcome to the Conference Committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Hi, Mr. Chair, members, Michael Meilenberg, Office of Enterprise Technology.
Go ahead. I don't assume that I know what negotiations have been going on or what agreements have been struck or where the loose ends are, but we have this one document here that's been, it's got some red print on the top, it's highlighted in yellow in some places, and so what is the proposal that is being made to the Conference Committee?
Mr. Chair, members, we were approached recently by both the Health Board and the professional group that represents the social workers in coming up with some language that met their needs in terms of...
I've got a copy. Not everybody's got a copy of this. We need to have it handed out.
Mr. Chair, members, the language that is being passed around is language that was drafted by Minnesota Management and Budget and the Office of Enterprise Technology in conjunction with the health boards, or they have had at least seen language and approved of it. The language accomplishes a couple things. It does some initial cleanup, but more importantly, it addresses something that both the health board and the professional group that represents the social workers had wanted to do. They came to us and said that they no longer opposed migrating to the system, and they were willing to pay their fair share, and that one of the ideas that they had to accomplish that was to use existing resources from licensing fees that they already paid from a surplus that has been generated from those fees. There is currently $12.6 million in this surplus, and a portion of it could be used each year equivalent to the amount that would be raised by the surcharge. So this would allow them to use their surplus to pay for their equivalent amount of surcharge, and then therefore their license holders wouldn't be charged the surcharge at all. The language is dependent on the amount that currently is in the fund, the surplus that exists in the fund, and we know that there is activity on both the House side and the Senate side to use a portion of that fund for health and human services related costs. The Senate, as I understand it, is taking $6 million of the $12.6 million that's in surplus from the fund. If that were to go through, if this language would still be effective, and it would still allow, there would still be enough money in the fund to say to be used for their surcharge amount to cover it. The House has a proposal to take $10 million from the surplus, and that would create some problems, but there would still be some money in the account that could be used to defray the surcharge costs, maybe for 1 year at least, of the surcharge, the initial year. In addition to that, even if all of the money were drained from the surplus account, the language would still have importance and would still have relevance, because it would allow them in subsequent bienniums to do the same thing, which is to use the surplus funds in lieu of the surcharge.
Mr. Meilenburg, just to be clear, I mean, we're talking about a lot of different groups. Certainly I heard in the Senate State Government Budget Division, we heard from the psychologists, we heard from the realtors, we heard from the insurance agents. I've stopped in the hall and told by the cosmetologists, although they did not testify. I'm sure there's a lot of groups and boards and funds all over the place. Do we know where all this money is located if we're going to be identifying it to help pay for the system? Ms. Reed, identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, I'm Abigail Reed. I'm a budget officer at Minnesota Management and Budget. And this language here would just apply to the health boards that are funded through the State Government Special Revenue Fund. So this would just apply to those. And I did just want to note that Mr. Shepard made a suggestion on improving the language that we agree with. And so what we'll do is have to give you a version that incorporates Mr. Shepard's suggestion. I think he's got it apparently already. So it's a small technical
issue. Okay, so this just deals with the health boards. Are the realtors going to be complaining then, and the insurance agents? What, I mean, I want to make sure that everybody's bought off on what we're doing here.
Mr. Chair, members, language is already included in both the House and Senate side that addresses the realtor's concerns. That language would basically serve the same purpose as the language for the health board. It allows them to use current funds generated from a technology surcharge, the so-called $40 surcharge that was passed in 2007, and allows them to use excess monies from that in order to pay for the surcharge or in replacement of the surcharge. And there's a number of the realtors here.
Okay. Now, we've got some language here, and I hope all the members and staff have a copy of that. Could somebody just walk us through and tell us just what this actually does? Because, again, this is not something that came from House Counsel or Senate Counsel, and so we may want to make sure that I want to know who drafted this, and I want to make sure I understand what the word is. Who drafted this, first of all?
Mr. Chair, I drafted it, and okay. What we can do is work with, if you agree with the principles in here, we can work with staff to get a different version that's easier to incorporate. Basically, what I had to do to reduce the complexity is just kind of start on a clean sheet of paper, and what it does is just take the language that you already had and then adds in a few technical tweaks, and then this language we're discussing related to the health board.
So the stuff that is highlighted in yellow are things that have not been adopted by either the House or the Senate, but everything else has been. Is that what you're saying? Okay.
The section labeled B, Mr. Chair,
right,
is largely adopted. I've made a few small changes in there that I would expect.
Why don't you identify just what it is that you're proposing, whether it's minor or major, because if it's brand new to us, if not everybody's seen it, we need to know exactly what the words are and, you know, what it is you're suggesting to us to do, because we can't give direction to counsel unless we understand and they understand what the proposal is.
Mr. Chair, would you prefer that I go and prepare a version that just reflects the exact changes in that?
I need to know what the proposal is. I can't ask counsel to prepare anything unless you tell us what it is. And I'm looking at language here. I want to either somebody walk through it or give us something that tells us what the proposal is. And when we walk out of here, I want to make sure that the affected groups understand what it is too, so they're not ambushing me in the hall and telling me they didn't understand anything either. So is this your proposal? And if it is, I need somebody to explain what your proposal is.
Mr. Chair, I can walk through the proposal.
That's what I'm asking for.
Mm-hmm.
Please do it.
Subdivision 1 to 2.
Representative Kahn.
I then think it will be easy for council to point out the parts that have changed from the existing language that are in the bill.
If council has
maybe
any questions.
Not word for word, but I think they can probably do that.
If council has any questions, please, you know, please feel free to jump in. Thank you. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, the subdivision 1 is the same as the language that you had adopted. The only change is the highlighted portion, receipts and transfers. Someone had pointed out that we're now adding transfers to it, so it would be helpful to identify that in the first subdivision. And that subdivision just establishes the account into which the funds would go and then appropriates the money in there to OEP for the purposes of constructing the system. Subdivision 2 remains the same from what you had considered previously. Subdivision 3 is now just divided into the three parts. The first part is the surcharge as proposed by OET, and then the next part, B and C and D, provide some of the exceptions that you've been considering throughout the committee process. The item B basically just says that it's a broad authority that any agency that can provide funds from existing license revenue can do that in lieu of collecting the surcharge. And that remains largely unchanged from what you've had in your versions, except I believe we fixed something related to the word transfer.
Okay. You said receipts and transfers before. Did it be a technical change?
Oh, yeah. So it was just a technical change to say eliminate receipts from and just leave it as transfers. They weren't receipts. And then part C is the new language. And Mr. Shepard has the updated version. We can get copies out that basically provides, as Mr. Meilenberg said, the ability for the health board to use a portion of their state government special revenue funds instead of charging the surcharge. And as we discussed, because it will be necessary to balance the various transfers that are being considered from that fund against each other, it does provide that the health boards would assess the surcharge in any case where the balances are not sufficient to cover the amount due to OEP. And then Part D is the commerce language that you had previously related to real estate agents and other licensees of commerce. I think there were some small differences between the House and Senate positions. I honestly can't remember which one I grabbed. I think it might be the House position. And then Subdivision 4 remains unchanged. Subdivision 5, we just provided a technical change. It didn't clearly state who the appropriation was to, so we just added the State Chief Information Officer. And that's just a provision that indicates if there are any funds left in the account at the end of system development, that they would be available to defray the cost of the operating of the system. And what that does is basically reduce the amount agencies would have to pay in the short term to operate the system. They'd use up all that extra funding that might be left, however much it would be, and then they would start paying the ongoing operating costs. And Subdivision 6 is the priority. That was pulled, I think both sides had it, but one side had it twice, so we just pulled it once. And then Subdivision 7 is the expiration for the end of the surcharge in the account. After that, there was, I believe in the Senate position, a section on amending commerce's language related to technology fees. That was suggested to eliminate the sentence that Mr. Bodern had mentioned. It said after the license were migrated, there had been some discussion about removing that sentence, so that's the suggestion here.
And that removal of that part has been discussed. Mr. Chair, members, that removal of that language has been discussed with the realtors and others, and we've heard no concerns about removing that language saying that after the licenses are migrated, that the money would be transferred to OET from Commerce.
Let the record reflect we do have a quorum on both sides. Thank you. Okay, something was just passed out now, too, and I'm not quite sure where. What is this? Is this Mr. Shepard? Both Mr. Shepard? Did you have something that you wanted to...
Mr. Chair, member, shortly before the meeting started today, Ms. Reed and I had an email exchange, and in the Subdivision 3, Paragraph C, in the original version, it wasn't clear to me if this determination about using existing license accounts was to be made collectively by all the health boards together or individually by each separate health board. The original version implied it was a collective decision of all of them together, but in speaking, Ms. Reed, we haven't had a chance to talk about this, but in our email exchange, it appeared that what they wanted was that each board would make that decision. And so I basically just cut and paste from an email that Ms. Reed sent me shortly before the meeting started, a new subdivision 3 paragraph C that replaces her original version. Everything else is exactly as was distributed in Ms. Reed's original version.
Thank you, Mr. Shepard. Any questions of the members of the conference committee on the language that we have before us? It's my intention to take the testimony of the affected groups after we clear up this, but Senator Fein?
Mr. Chair, on the Section 13, I do have some questions about, like, at 21.24 and to the end there, about that you could temporarily reduce or suspend the surcharge if the account exceeds $2 million. My understanding is this is to pay for a new system, and I would think that, you know, there would just be maybe advance payments, or I guess I'm not sure how this process would work.
Mr. Chair, members, the language that Senator Olsen is speaking to is language that is in current statute, and it relates to the surcharge that was enacted in 2007 for the Department of Commerce's electronic licensing system. So this is not new language, but this is language that's in current statute relating to the old technology fee that Department of Commerce has been imposing on
licensing. You'll recall that we didn't have the money to start it up, so we kind of went with a sort of a pilot project, where, you know, to temporarily get it going. So we've already got something in law dealing with this, but this expands and completes the project here. Senator Fein?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, because my thinking is that when we want to advance the payment, instead of cutting back on the surcharge just temporarily, you make a payment to the vendor who's building the system, and then you got to start the surcharge up again. That doesn't seem, because I imagine that's how it would play out. I would think you would, you know, build off the system and maybe drop the surcharge once it's paid for or something, if it's advanced in the six-year period, but that's why this doesn't make sense to me.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, I believe that the current language was there to build a system that is leased from a vendor. So I'm not sure, this is a question that the Department of Commerce would be better equipped to answer, but I believe that they make ongoing payments for that system. And so that situation is slightly different than the system that we're looking at, which is to buy and build and own a state system.
Okay. Any other questions of OET on this proposal? Mr. Bonner.
Mr. Chairman, one thing in looking at the new language that Mr. Shepard circulated, it just occurred to me, at the very end of the new paragraph C, there's a sentence that reads, if the balance of the health occupations licensing account established in 1406 is insufficient to make transfers, I'm thinking that would be something that would be determined by the Commissioner of Finance, so it might be helpful there before the beginning of that sentence to insert, if the Commissioner of Finance determines that the balance of the health occupations licensing account, et cetera, that might make it a little clearer who needs to do that. The other thing that's a little unclear to me, as originally on the Senate side, the new language that you see, the standalone language in Section 13 on the back of the document, that language as it relates to the Department of Commerce was intended to replace what is shown as paragraph D in Subdivision 3 on the front of the document. Maybe there's something in paragraph D that we missed. I'm not sure you need both of them.
Mr. Chair, members, my intent was to not really touch the commerce language at all, but I was having a little trouble with the differences in the House and the Senate, so I would say whichever way to achieve the commerce language that you had before is what is intended with this new draft.
It's my thought that, I mean, we'll hear from OET and the affected parties and so forth. Madam Chair, I'm also thinking that maybe we probably, you know, when we're fully informed on this, we'll probably, I'm the chair, but you're also a co-chair.
Okay.
But we would probably just set it aside and give council the opportunity to come up with an amendment that they've had the opportunity to work with, rather than just adopt something that's presented in a different way here.
As I understood from what Mr. Shepherd said, Mr. Chairman, I thought they had worked with it.
It could be. Well,
the latest copy that we got is what they have worked with.
Sure. Well, and of course, Mr. Byron just suggested some language changes here, so I want to make sure council on both sides are satisfied before we take a final action and vote here. So, okay, is there anything else that anybody wants to hear from OET on? If not, then I want to hear...
Maybe it's more appropriate after the people from the various boards testify, but the thing that has, and maybe this issue is now been worked out in private, but I would really like to hear the basic issue that we've heard is that in order to have a really secure system that meets current techniques and that you need to get it all in one system. You can't have these different, everyone came to us and kept telling us we love our system, we just got it, it's wonderful. So I'd kind of like to have OET give their thoughts on the question of the security of one system versus multiple systems and new requirements and so forth. Just, I don't know if you want it now or after the other testified or what.
It's a fundamental question that goes to the part of the proposal that's here. So I don't know if Mr. Meilenberg wants to talk or punt it upstairs. Maybe Mr. Khanna, what you're...
Mr. Chair, members...
Why don't we get Mr. Khanna or somebody else down here. Somebody else get down here. Why one system as opposed to different systems? Mr. Boozy. Welcome to the conference committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Christopher Boozy. I'm the Chief Information Security Officer for the state of Minnesota. To answer the question, it's very possible to have multiple systems scattered across the state and to spend enough money on every one of those systems to make them all secure. But the fact of the matter is, in today's environment, that's something that's very hard to do. When we built the enterprise e-licensing system, our security team spent a significant amount of effort on that system to make sure that that system was as secure as it could be. For example, on the front end of that system is an advanced identity and access management system that allows us to really do a very good job with robust efforts to manage user IDs and passwords with repeatable processes. We've also assessed web-based computer systems are particularly vulnerable in today's environment to security problems. We are able to go out there with our specialized tools and do detailed testing of the web services that are particularly vulnerable to hacker attacks to make sure that we can find and fix all of the items with the web pages themselves. We also did detailed I guess you could call it penetration testing of the servers that are underneath that system. So I think that's one of the beauties of having a big service like this is in OET, particularly when we combine that with the enterprise security office, is that we really have the firepower and we have the tools and the talent in our environment to really do what needs to be done to make sure that those systems are in fact secure. And we've seen examples in the past where agencies without those types of resources, without that kind of firepower, have put up web-based computer systems, and there's been significant problems with those systems. Before I joined the Office of Enterprise Technology and I worked for Legislative Auditor Jim Noble, one of the last audits that I penned was the audit of the web-based motor vehicle licensing, where we actually recommended that they shut down that system because of the problems that were in that system. There's been other systems as well that have been brought up. We've had hacker issues with the systems, and they had to be brought back down and reworked. So I think it's really important to recognize that you certainly can have lots and lots
of systems that are out there. But putting up web-based systems today exposes citizens' data to risk, and you really have to know what you're doing. And I think with the e-licensing system, having that NOET where we can do that work and we can channel our efforts on that one environment, we can make sure that we can do it the best that we can possibly do.
Okay. Any questions? Irv Donnie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So yesterday, Mr. Lally referred to an overall kind of statewide enterprise architecture, and I'm curious whether or not some of those front-end identification, security, and validation components for e-licensing, are they contributing to that overall enterprise architecture? In other words, are we getting some additional value out of the e-licensing system?
Mr. Booby?
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey. Actually, as we work on the enterprise security program, I think it's important to recognize that we're a little over 2 years old now, and putting in place an architecture, a security architecture that fits in seamlessly with the state's overall technology architecture, that's something that's under development as we speak today. But identity and access management is going to be a key part of that architecture. And with the enterprise e-licensing system, the components that we built for identity and access management are components that are now reusable. So as we build other computer systems within OET or within other agencies, those tools and processes that we're building right now are tools and processes that other computer systems can share and can plug into, and that's the primary premise of why we have architecture, so that we can build robust things that are done well and reuse them over and over again.
Representative,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one question. You alluded earlier to a cost of keeping the multiple systems secure, or at least to your level of satisfaction when it comes to security. Can you give us a ballpark estimate of what that cost would be if we were to keep all of them secure to your satisfaction?
Mr. Boozy, or do you need somebody else to respond?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I really don't have the number today of what it would cost to put together the security architecture to get up to the level that we need to be for the entire government as a whole. We have a very complicated infrastructure right now with, I believe, somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 40 data centers, a lot of disparate systems. The numbers are hard to generate today because we haven't done the job that we really need to do long-term of defining standards and trying to focus and channel our technology into a more standardized environment. So we just don't have those numbers today. The only thing I can say is the numbers today are a lot higher than they need to be, and eventually long term, as we start to work on standards and architecture and these things, we hope the numbers will be smaller eventually.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Please identify yourself for the record.
John Lally, Office of Enterprise Technology. When we embarked on e-licensing as a major component of the e-government strategy, it was in recognition of the fact that there's a significant benefit to the people we serve to have them have a consistent way of getting access and a consistent way of defining their identity and a consistent way of processing transactions, simply because through that familiarization, that the efficiency of their processing and their time is increased, because they don't have to figure out how to navigate and how to deal with a myriad of different agency approaches. And this is just the first step in what is a long-term strategy to try to get that consistency across the application. Security is a major reason for doing it, and we have to address that up front rather than try to put it on in the tail end of this process. But it's only one of the benefits of moving to a consolidated approach to government. And that's where, if you look at the different licensing systems, they vary significantly in their approach, in the navigation, in the mechanisms that they use, in quality and security, obviously, we know that. But we want to make sure that when citizens come to state government to do business, that we use the technology to eliminate the limitations that are there of having to come on our time to our places to do business. They don't want to do that anymore. They know they don't have to. But we also want to make sure they know they're dealing with the state of Minnesota, and they're dealing with a consistent and secure basis where we're trying to make their burden of being part of the government process as low as we possibly can, and in the same process we can improve our efficiency. So this is, security is the immediate need to do for these systems, but it's not the only benefit from the consolidation.
Any other questions of the members? Okay, at this time, is there anybody here who wants to be heard on the proposal that is before us? And I'm referring the language that OET prepared, or Ms. Reed prepared, I guess, and then Mr. Shepherd sort of had another document here. If you don't have it, let us know, but this is the time to come on forward. Please come forward and identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. I'm Alan Ingram. I'm the Executive Director of the National Association of Social Workers. And I'm obviously speaking on their behalf today, not all the other licensing boards, et cetera. Our first position was to exempt our licensees from this because we believe, despite what the other testimony is, that our system works well and that it's come through several audits and is secure and reliable, and it just seemed like it wasn't worth spending all the extra money to do that. But we failed to persuade many of you that was the case. So our second position was to make it as painless as possible for our members, and using our money that has already been collected from us in the form of licensing fees and deposited in the special revenue fund, but was not needed over the years to fund the ongoing operations of the board of social work, made sense to us to use that money at least in that way, because it's at least related in some reasonable manner to the purpose and mission of licensing, rather than have our funds be taken for other purposes, which has happened on at least two other occasions where this legislature, either on the governor's initiative or on some legislator's initiative, has taken this money and used it for forestry or road building or whatever else they didn't want to raise taxes for. So this is a preferable use of these fees, which were dedicated for a particular purpose. And so we have agreed to this language. Some of the technical changes that you still have to deal with do not appear to be important to us. So you could say, in effect, that we're signing off on this. However, Senator Bethold, I don't think I can promise that you'll never hear from social workers again.
Well, I'll have my response when I get the emails, okay?
Fair enough.
Fair enough. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I had talked to some social... Oh, don't leave.
No.
Mr. Chair, I had some social workers come visit with me, and they were talking about phasing out of their system in 2012 or something like that, the system that you talked that they thought worked pretty well for them now. And was that phasing out, or was the contract up with the vendor or something? That's what kind of stuck in my mind.
Well, Representative... Mr. Chair, Senator.
Where's the sign?
Very good. I'm not aware of any phasing out. I'm not part of the technical operations of the Board of Social Work, and so this is the first that I've heard that anything was going to be phased out. As far as I'm concerned, we had a reliable and have a reliable system that would not have to be changed unless it failed in some way, and there was no indication to any of us that was about to happen. So you'll have to talk to, I believe, someone from the Administrative Services Unit is here from the Health-Related Licensing Board. You may want to ask them question.
Federal thing.
This is personal for me because I have a mother, a sister, and a daughter who are all social workers, so we're going to be lobbied pretty heavy if we don't do this right.
Governor Conn.
I suggest, Senator Alcine, that whatever we do, if you would just offer to pay what the surcharge is going to cost them, you'd be home free on this issue, and it wouldn't cost you very much. less than a day of per diem for the, and that will cover 2 years for them.
So your per diem is $90, huh? Over 6 years.
Anybody else want a question for Mr. Ingram? Okay, thank you. Anybody else who wants to be heard on this issue, please come forward and identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dr. Cody Weiberg. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy. I'm also the Chair of the Health-Related Licensing Board's IP Workgroup.
And your last name again, sir, is what?
Weiberg, W-I-B-E-R-G.
Okay, thank you.
And I have been designated by the rest of the executive directors of the board to attend this meeting today and speak on behalf of all the boards. Mr. Chair, when you called for people to come up, I did not come up with Mr. Ingram purposely, and that's because during some of the earlier testimony and some of the comments, the boards have sort of been lumped together with the professional associations. And the boards of state agencies that regulate the professional associations, we do not walk in lockstep with them. We do not share the same concerns. And one of the things that I want to make sure that all the committee members understand is that the health licensing boards do not oppose the e-licensing system, and that was sort of alluded to earlier. We do not oppose the statewide e-licensing system. We are, in fact, going to work very constructively with OET to put that statewide e-licensing system in place. So I just wanted to make sure that the committee members understood this. We had one single solitary concern, which has been addressed by the language that was developed by MMB, and that is that as the original language was written in the bill, it called for us to begin collecting the surcharge in July of this year. We do, as you've heard, most of us have existing e-licensing systems. Our concern was that we needed to make changes to those systems in order to even collect the surcharge. We had no appropriation to make the changes, and we could not have made those changes happen by July 1st, which is why we contacted OET, and they in turn worked with MMB. And the language that was proposed yesterday completely meets our concerns because it allows us the option of either charging a surcharge at the point when we can charge it, or in lieu of that, transferring money from our reserve accounts in the special revenue fund. So I just really wanted to clarify that and get it on record that we do not oppose the system. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions of this witness? Seems like nothing. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else who wants to be heard on this issue? Please come forward and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Christine Berger, and I represent the Minnesota Association of Realtors. We are very comfortable with the language as listed on this handout with the red writing and all that on top. Both sections that relate to the realtors, which is subpart D and section 13 on the back, are fine. It's a nice cross-reference to each other. So we just want to basically thank you for helping us with this compromise. We want to thank the chair. We want to thank both the committees and the conference committee. We want to say, thank the Department of Commerce and OET for helping us on this compromise.
Thank you. Any questions of this witness? Thank you. Is there anybody else who wishes to be heard on this topic? Only once. Second time. Anybody else? Third time. Okay. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could, I'd like to ask one final question of somebody from OET, if I could.
That's fine. OET? What is the state's question? We'll see what the right person up here.
Sure, the question is we had an original project plan and schedule and, you know, kind of financial model to support the e-licensing project as it previously existed, and now we're adjusting that. And I want to make sure that we aren't doing that in a way that puts it on such a razor's edge financially for success that we have no margin for error in the project, that we created an additional amount of risk here where 6-12 months from now we're going to be having somebody come back asking us for additional funding to get it done, or whether we've created new circumstances that kind of impede the success of the project.
Ms. Mallenberg.
Mr. Chair, members, Michael Mallenberg, Office of Enterprise Technology. Representative Downey, we don't believe that the changes that we've made with the amendments create any significant problems for the implementation of the project. We believe that the changes are all possible. The amendments earlier made some added some comfort language regarding a guarantee of functionality, which we are comfortable with because we expect to retain all current functionality and actually to improve functionality. We've also made some changes in terms of priority, and Representative Winkler has offered some language that we think is workable in terms of the migration schedule, and that the changes that we've made today are all workable changes that will not impede the system. We don't plan on coming forward for any additional funding.
Thank you. Any other questions? Anything further on this topic? Council has requested that we temporarily set this aside to give them the opportunity to come up with a formal amendment, as we normally would do in this process. So we actually have the language here in the proper format that we would then vote on. So we can have that done in a little while, but they need a little bit of time to do it. When we go on to the next topic, we'll be talking about budget issues. I don't know that we need to have Council sitting here for that when they can spend a few minutes getting that ready. So I will direct Council to prepare an amendment reflecting the proposal that we have before us so that we can see this in a little while.
Okay, can we do that?
Okay, so we'll set this issue aside for a bit, and then we will come back to it. But we're not going to open testimony for it again. We should have a one-page document. Has that been distributed? State government finance, general fund comparison, change items only, dollars and thousands. What I thought we would do, although we went through the spreadsheet 2 days ago, I thought we should now spend a little bit of time looking at each general fund area and get an idea of where there are differences and why there may be some differences so we can start honing in on some agreement on the final appropriations here. So if anybody's here on appropriations issues, this is really the time to pay attention here. So I'll ask Ms. Roberts and Mr. Lundeen if they can just identify by topic, starting with the legislature and the Secretary of State, State Auditor, all the way down. We'll just go in sequence here. What the major differences are, and if you can identify, you know, why, if you know why the differences are, just identify that so we can start getting a better handle on these fund areas. So let's start with the legislature. Who wants to handle that? Mr. Lundeen.
Okay, taking a look at the legislature, the major differences between the Senate and the House. For the Senate, both have taken the 5% reduction, and the Senate took the 5% reduction to both the House and the LCC, but the House took a 3% reduction. So that is basically the differences there. And then there are the differences of the smaller funding things within the LCC.
Question. Okay, so did the House also take a 3% reduction in the LCC or 5%?
3%.
3%. Could I just inquire just on that topic, why, you know, any rationale for the difference so I can understand? Reverend Tan or somebody? Or
well, we had actually thought specifically, and this was in consultation with House leadership, that the cuts of considering how little flexibility the legislature has over the executive branch, that the cut of 3%, and particularly in the LCC, considering the, even though it places it is funded, considering the additional emphasis that we're making and importance we're giving to the legislative auditor, we didn't think that a cut of that size was warranted. I think we originally gave the same cut to the Senate, but then we said, why should we give the Senate more money than they're asking for? We don't do that anywhere else, so that didn't seem to make any sense. So if a 5% cut is all right for the Senate, we thought they could keep the 5% cut. As long as when we're looking at the funding numbers, the Senate never drops below half of the House's budget. He thinks that would be inappropriate.
Well, and there's discussions that have to go on a higher level. There's issues regarding the television coverage and so forth. I think some of those costs the Senate has incurred, and we there's issues that go on beyond just overall the numbers of people, and some are fixed costs that we're going to have regardless of whether we're half the size or a third of the size of the body. I think people should understand. I'm less conversant in the House budget, obviously, than the Senate budget, but we did take a 3% reduction a year ago when we had a budget problem. The governor suggested an allotment last December, and he couldn't require us to do it, but the Senate went along. We did participate in the allotment. We did agree to a 5% cut, and when you consider that the Senate budget, and I expect the House budget is quite similar, over 80% of our budget is personnel, and most of the rest of what's left is technology. It's going to be noticeable if we go through this. So the Senate budget is actually more than 8% reduced from it was even a year ago. So we do take it quite seriously, but as I say, at least dealing with some of the overall legislative issues, I think we may have to certainly involve other folks in that discussion, I think, were going to. But I was just wondering just what the rationale for the numbers were.
That was the rationale.
Okay.
And we did. I'll point out that the House did participate in the unallotment also. And I guess when you're saying that 80% of the budget is personnel costs, that ought to reflect the fact that there are half as many senators as House members, mm-hmm. even though they may be twice as important.
Well, I wouldn't say twice. Maybe more, but well, thank you. Okay, let's proceed. We had what else did we have under the legislative budget? We had
have had in previous years, and sometimes these things that we carry along, every once in a while we manage to forget one of them, and we've often in previous years in this bill had a requirement for more cooperation and more study of joint functions between the House and the Senate. For example, I think it would have been very advantageous to the Senate to, maybe now you're kind of caught up, years ago it would have been very advantageous for you to have House technology doing all of the technology for both bodies. It would clearly be highly advantageous for the House to just completely share in the television expenses. It would be very advantageous. The Senate doesn't have anything that's of the quality or whatever distribution of our session weekly. That would also be something that would really nice if session weekly was a legislative session weekly instead of a House session weekly. And when you look at the accounting parts of big corporations, I think the fact that we both have two separate accounting systems, and in fact that they're separate from the statewide accounting system, when LCC, I understand, is on the statewide accounting system and is really perfectly happy with that, seems to me to be a set of fences that we don't need between our organizations. And as you alluded to, those discussions may have to occur at a level above ours, but mm-hmm. I really think it is our job, and I'm sorry that I fell down in not putting it in the bill this year, but I do think it is our job to advance that discussion along, like perhaps the requirement to go on the statewide accounting system or some.
Well, and Representative Kahn, to the extent that we are facing budget issues in the legislature, as everybody else is, maybe this is the time to look at some of those things. I know that the Senate certainly benefited as we were looking at the phone system. We appreciated some of the assistance we got from the House on that. And we, for instance, are looking at our payroll system, and we understand the House has done some things. And there's some things that we've been doing. If you have any information on the voting board, come and talk to us, because we spent quite a bit of time reviewing that issue. So. But there certainly are some other areas they have to do. Personnel, at some point, the House has to run its shop, the Senate has to run its shop, and we'll just have to make sure that we both have the resources necessary to do our respective jobs. But But we also believe in putting things online, too. And you know, if you want to do things the old-fashioned way, waste paper with these weekly reports,
only
I guess
eight
that's
and
one
a half
thing.
By 11.
Well, if I still, there are still trees, so, okay.
Well, we like that.
You like killing trees?
No.
Yeah, well, in some, as a Grand Rapids, I understand. That's a big
job,
big
job,
job, job, job. I understand that. That's right. That's true.
With the House does understand, as we deal with people, that there are still a sector of the paper, of people that like to have a piece of paper in their hands. As I recall our earlier discussion offline about how we like to look at the New York Times.
I like to
take it out and spread it across the kitchen table. And people like me who are keeping them from
They're going to be dead in 5 years anyway. That's a different issue. Okay, we don't control that part. Okay, Mr. Lundin, can we go through the rest of the legislative budget? I knew this would take a few minutes on this part, so go ahead.
The next item, the Senate has the funding for the redistricting commission contained.
Okay. Could I just ask a question? We're tracking the money here for the redistricting commission. It's a separate bill. Senator Polgemiller has it. I don't know if there's any... anything happening. We obviously have to do something on redistricting. Are you aware of what may be happening within the House in preparing for redistricting in the next 2 years or so? As I say, there's a bill and we're just tracking the money here, but not the language.
No,
we're not. Simon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that the companion bill in the House was a Representative Hilty bill. This is the companion to Senator Polgemiller's. I don't think it was even heard this year. So that doesn't really answer your question as to what generally redistricting. I know that this formulation of this commission didn't get very far in the House.
Okay. Thank you. Because as I say, it's traveling separately, so I don't know what's going on there. So okay. Ms. Wendy.
The next item is a House funding item. This is to the Fiscal Policy Commission. And this is one-time funding related to the federal stimulus oversight.
Is that something that we know that is coming in, or?
And we had a request from the Department of Management and Budget for $1.6 million. Is a deficiency to fund the tracking of the federal stimulus money. The House has passed, and I think the Senate may be on the House floor. In taking a look at that, and these figures actually came from the Senate, instead of just giving them $1.6 million, I think the request that is being forwarded to management and budget is $700,000 for management and budget and $384,000 for the state auditor, because the state auditor has some appropriations, and you're probably well aware of those particular numbers. The $1.6 million is the rest of that $1.6 million is kind of spread around in this particular bill. We had given it to Representative Kahn and the committee. And there's an obligation, I think, for the legislature to at least be involved in oversight of the federal stimulus money. And the oversight portion of that will be the CFP, and they've had hearings during the legislative process, so I think there's a need at least for have a small amount of money, and $16,000 isn't too much to be able to provide that legislative oversight of the federal stimulus money, and I think the rest of that is probably in Representative Kahn, the rest of that is probably in auditors, or is that traveling separately some other place?
Where in the Senate, where are we at, Mr. Lundin, on that one?
That funding is contained in Senator Cohen's Senate File 1938.
Okay. That's on the floor, isn't it?
I believe it's
on the floor. Okay, so that issue is on the Senate floor. Okay. Okay, and then Manitoba Legislators Forum, I think that Senator Sashtog had the bill, did he not? Or we had it in the Senate, so we're aware of the issue, we just didn't have the funding for it, so, okay.
I think Mr. Chairman, I think we put that funding in pretty much at the last minute in one of the financial ways and means, didn't we?
No, you put it in your provision the last, but it has been a continuing proposal.
It
should be in the base at some particular time, but it's good to look at it each year, too.
Yeah, as I say, we're aware of the proposal, we just, as I just say, didn't have funding for it, so. Okay, and then in lieu of rent offset, is that the same in both bills then? Okay. Okay, so is there anything that we need to discuss on the overall legislative budget? Just knowing the differences there. Okay. Okay, if nothing further, Secretary of State, is that, it looks pretty much the same, is it?
Yeah, we have the same proposal, okay. And we also have the special revenue for the continuation of the upgrades they're doing for technology.
And we adopted the Secretary of State's articles yesterday, so we may not have to do anything further on that part. State Auditor, we have a difference there, so.
Yeah, the first difference is with the operating budget reduction. The Senate took the proposal that the governor had for the reduction to the non-reimbursable portion of the state auditor's budget, so that's what the 144 represents. And then both the House and the Senate have included money for the audit portion of the state auditor's budget for the stimulus funds reporting and oversight, and so we do have different amounts there.
So now the Senate put more into it there. Is this similar to what we talked about on the oversight stimulus money in the legislative budget? Mr. Lindeen,
I can talk to how we arrived at the Senate
numbers. Okay. Why don't you explain that? Okay, the Senate numbers is what then?
Well, the 728 represents we got a request from the state auditor. There were actually two portions. The investigative portion of it is in Senator Cohen's Senate File 1938 that we discussed. And in this bill is just the audit portion. And this was the request that the auditor asked. She asked for some money starting in fiscal year 9 and then 10 and 11. So what this 728 represents is that entire request from fiscal year 9, 10, and 11.
You know, and I didn't ask if the Secretary of State's office wanted to comment earlier, but if they wish to do so, it seems pretty straightforward. But if the auditor wishes to, we'll give them a moment. Ms. Roberts, could you explain that the House side, or somebody from the House side, explain what the House's position was here, the numbers?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we were using the same information that the Senate was using, but the House funding represents only the 10 and 11 portion of that funding,
okay.
Which was 655,000 plus an additional $25,000 from the 09 request, but that represents the one-time equipment cost that would be needed.
Okay. And I did see the state auditor here. Is she here now? Did she wish to make any comments on this part of the budget? I said we're just going to get an idea of what's going on here, but if you wish to comment, this would be a nice time to do so. Representative Solberg.
A point of clarification, and on the Senate floor, of the 728 in the federal stimulus oversight, 384 of that is being carried there. Is that correct?
Correct.
Because that is the 09 appropriation.
Well, it was actually available until through fiscal year 11.
But it starts in 09. It's carried in the 09. Okay.
State Auditor Otto, welcome to the conference committee. You'll need to identify yourself for record.
I do or don't?
You do.
Okay.
Tell us who you are.
Rebecca Otto, Minnesota State Auditor. Thanks for hearing me briefly. I know you want to get this work done, and originally when we gave the Senate the numbers and the House the numbers, it was for possible deficiency bill, and so would it help us get going in 9? It looks like this won't happen until 10 and 11 anyway, because we can't hire probably in 9 by the time this is all done. So for that portion, if it makes your job easier, we can go with the House numbers on that. Does that make it easy for you?
Well, we have decisions to make along the way, but any it's one less decision we may have to make.
I just wanted to point out on these, we do have an offset down on the revenues, because there will be audit revenue that the state auditor will be bringing in, and it's a non-dedicated receipt to the general fund.
So, Mr. Chair, essentially this has no impact on the general fund, which is the good news.
Okay. Any questions of the auditor? Anything further? Well, thank you very much. This helps us a bit, okay?
Thank you.
Attorney General, it looks like the similar numbers, but there's a difference in the House number. I believe that would be the False Claims Act. Is that the change there? Okay.
Mr. Chair, it's actually partial funding for two different
bills. House File 7 and 8. Okay. Did you want to discuss that? Just, again, let us know what the numbers were representing, or somebody? Ms. Roberts?
I can tell you what
sure.
The two bills were.
Sure.
House File 7 is Representative Winkler's bill. It was the misuse of state funds, and then House File 8 is the False Claims Act.
Okay. Okay. They're in the bills, and I just wanted to know where the difference. Otherwise, we are identical for the 5% cut. Is that what we did here?
Yes.
Okay.
I guess.
Gotcha. Representative Kass?
Could we have a comment from Representative Simon?
Yeah, go ahead. Representative Simon or Winkler, did you want to make a further comment? I just want to know why there was a difference, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to say, Mr. Chair, just a point of clarification. I would argue that it's not partial funding. I would argue that it's full funding or more.
Okay.
That would be my contention.
Okay.
I mean, our contention in the House
sure.
is that there shouldn't be any, but in case that they thought they needed some, this would cover it.
Okay.
And I can't speak for House File 7, but
sure.
for House File
7. But to the extent that there's a difference in the House position and the Senate position is on the line there, it's because of, it does say on the line sheet here, but it's funding for House File 7 and House File 8. That's what the difference is there.
Got it.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, this may be an ongoing problem, but in previous years, I thought we've had more ability to disregard fiscal notes that we thought were erroneous. And I don't remember. I remember once one from the Human Rights Department which said that something adding some protected character. The fiscal note just said it was going to cost millions of extra dollars or something like that. And I remember that we thought at that time that all a big, very big fiscal note tells you is that the agency doesn't want to do it. And I don't know how, just in recent years, they seem to particularly, the fiscal notes on the tails, which I find particularly irritating, but the, they seem to be cast more in stone than they used to be. I don't know how we got to that position of...
Well, Representative Kahn, this is the second time I've had this discussion today in a committee that I sat on. The Senate Finance Committee had, ironically enough, earlier today.
Sorry.
Well, and rightly so. But, you've seen far more fiscal notes than I have. I can recall when I was a first-term senator, and this was 1993, I had some nice little bill that I liked, and I get to the Human Services Budget Division, and Senator Samuelson was chairing it, and he said, we can't do this because of the fiscal note. And I said, well, of course they were going to, in order to do my little proposal, they're going to have to hire lots of staff, get desks, telephones, rent office space, all this stuff. I mean, it was a killer fiscal note, so obviously my nice little proposal didn't go anywhere. But we've seen it, but the issue that we had this morning that brought it up is that yesterday we did have Senator Pappas presented the domestic partners proposal, which is in the House bill, but is not in the Senate one because we have not taken a position on it yet. And of course, that was by going through the fiscal note, it'd be very difficult to do. And in fact, there was testimony from the administration against it. Today, Senator Gerlach presented a bill on hiring veterans, and it was narrowed down so that they have to give a preference to the top five veterans and so forth. And there was a considerable fiscal note, a much larger one, but basically the testimony we had the other day in the State Government Budget Division, and we heard again this morning, is that, well, because it's going to be spread about through all the state government, they can absorb it. And so we were having trouble understanding, okay, which one of these, I mean, when you get issues, when do we decide we can absorb it, and when do we decide that we just can't do it because it's going to cost too much? And so we spent quite a bit of time on it. And it isn't unique to this administration. I mean, this has been going on through numerous administrations, and it's always frustrating, but I think you're right. If they want to do it, they ignore the fiscal note. If they don't want to do it, they say, we really mean it. So I don't know the answer to that one, Representative Kahn.
I mean, obviously it's something that we don't want to do for the entire budget. But at some point, I mean, there are lots of people in these agencies, and they have lots of things to do. And I think at some point the legislature can say, this is a priority, and we want you to do this, and we want you to absorb the cost of doing this.
Senator made that exact statement this morning.
Oh.
He said, sometimes we just say, you've got resources, just do it. So it is an ongoing discussion, not only this conference committee, but other places, yeah.
I don't know what discussion you had about the domestic partners cost, but we had, that's interesting because that's not coming out of the state budget. That's coming out of the CGIP funding and the CGIP reserve. And we had some comment, and of course, if you fill them unfairly, it doesn't seem irrational to try and make it a little fairer. In a way that you spend them, but we had someone tell us about the reserves, then we had someone come up afterwards and say that that's really not true, that's a completely false statement about how the reserves are being spent. And we decided for that one that we weren't going to argue it. We thought it was more important to advance for the factors that the state of Minnesota is the largest employer in the state that doesn't give domestic partnership benefits. They're really given all over, you know, most big companies, most private. We've always told we should be more like private business, and private business has decided this is a very good thing to do. So we decided not to advance the issue, not to argue the fiscal thing, so we put off the effective date so that it didn't affect us.
Well, I don't know what the Senate position is yet, so we'll have to hold back
on
it.
What was the position in finance?
Well, to recommend a pass. Now, there was some, the bill was modified to help bring down some of the cost of the fiscal note, but because but it's still, there's still cost to it there, but as I say, we still have a ways to go before I know what the Senate position is ultimately, so I don't know where we're at yet on that one.
I will point out that it did pass three, I don't want to say it passed them unanimously, but it did pass three House committees without anyone feeling strongly enough about it, and the House floor without anyone feeling strongly enough about it to ask for a roll call vote.
On the governor's office, the numbers are similar. There's a slight difference here, and I think there's a way in difference in the funding. Mr. Lundin or Ms. Roberts, can you comment on the governor's office funding?
I can talk to that. I think the House and the Senate are basically taking the same approach there. They want to appropriate the dollars that the governor has been using interagency agreements with agencies to fund the D.C. office and some of the staff in his office. And I think the difference, I think, had to do with just the way that I had compiled the numbers versus how Ms. Roberts had. And I think that the basic difference was, in the numbers that I compiled, there was one vacant position that didn't get picked up, but I think the funding for the groundskeeper got picked up in the Senate in the numbers that I put together. And I believe Ms. Roberts didn't include the groundskeeper, but included that vacant position. So it comes up to a $10,000 difference.
Well, we're going to send the senators out to do that. We think they need more exercise.
Well, I had proposed selling the mansion before. I mean, it's to get some money, but nobody liked that idea.
It's in our naming.
Oh, we can put that. Oh, I see. That's where the naming of things. Okay. Yeah. There's a slight. Mr. Bonner isn't here, but he did call my attention to one thing that needs to be tracked here. Apparently, what the Senate did is we said if the governor needs seven more people in his office, let him have seven more people. There's a purpose for interagency agreements,
yeah.
And you don't want to repeal that because there's a reason why somebody, you know, should be able to transfer from one agency temporarily to work in another agency. And if the governor needs the people, let him have the people, and we'll give him the funding to go with it. But apparently, now what the Senate actually did was reduce each other agency budget accordingly to pay for it. Now, apparently, the House returned the money to the agencies and then made the appropriation. Apparently, one of the other conference committees is using the money that you have already sent back to one of those agencies, and so we may have to make sure that we're in sync with what the other conference committees are doing to know exactly how we're paying for this. Are we reducing the budget, returning the money to the agencies? Because We just want to track it, but this goes beyond us. So we have to have our chief fiscal analyst in both bodies make sure that we're in sync with however we resolve this issue. But we're trying to get to the same place. It's just how we're doing it is different enough, but we need to know what's happening, big picture.
Clarification, the Senate reduced everybody's agencies by that much?
Where's the language?
If you look on page R5 of the side-by-side, there's rider language there that directs the Commissioner of Finance to subtract the amount of these interagency agreements from the various agency budgets.
From 3.34 down to 4.19, we just directed all the agency budgets to be reduced accordingly to get to $724,000. And their argument, you know, they said, well, you know, we're not using the money anyway because of, you know, we're using it to backfill these positions. So we just said, well, let's just reduce the appropriations and just transfer the money straight over. So Okay. Anything expensive around there? Okay, Department of Administration, we've got a couple of changes here. Who wants to go?
I'll let Ms. Roberts.
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, members, starting on line 30 of the change item spreadsheet, the first difference is the in lieu of rent increase. That's the appropriation that goes directly to the Department of Administration to pay
just
for
a second.
I
had not asked if anybody from the governor's office was here who wanted to testify on the previous point. If they are here, you know, we certainly would welcome their input, but if they're not, we'll proceed on. Okay, I'm sorry, Ms. Roberts.
Again, the in lieu of rent increases the appropriation that goes directly to administration to pay for the cost of the state office building, the Senate space in the Capitol and ceremonial space in the, and also the mall. Unlike state agencies, for example, the House of Representatives doesn't pay rent directly to admin, but it covers through the in lieu of rent increase.
Okay.
And the governor had asked for an increase because it hasn't been increased in several years, and the House did fund that.
Okay. And we'll be. And I also did not ask if anybody from the AG's office wanted to testify. If they are here, we'll give you the opportunity in a moment, too, but I failed to do that. So, okay, Ms. Roberts.
The next item, just noting on line 31, it shows that that there isn't a difference for the real property system. This was an increase at the actually continued funding that the governor had requested for the system. Neither the House or the Senate provided general fund money for this, but the House does have language in its bill setting up an account that would allow admin to work with agencies to try to fund this through some contribution to continue funding that. Moving on to line 32 is the Office of Grants Management. We're showing a $250,000 difference here between the House and Senate, but I think actually the positions are very similar. There's just some technical differences. The House directly appropriated money to continue this office, and then the House language directs the Commissioner of Administration to recover those costs through a portion of grants and deposit it in the general fund. The Senate has a similar position. I think I'll let Mr. Lundeen explain exactly how
that
works.
And this was Senator Jungbauer's floor amendment.
Yes,
Mr. Lundeen.
That's correct. Yeah, essentially, if you take a look on page R11, line 7.31, essentially we do provide the $250,000 to the Department of Administration for this program, but instead of making a general fund appropriation, we're basically transferring $125,000, or about not more than 0.5% of the amount of each grant. That is just taken off the grants and then transferred and appropriated to the Commissioner of Administration for this function.
And I will note that I'm aware, as members of the conference committee are, that the nonprofits don't like this proposal, or either way, have it skimmed off. But so, I mean, we'll get to that point at some point, but I know they don't like it. So,
Mr. Chair, are you entertaining amendments at this time, or do you want to just go through the budget?
If it were to be something that you know...
It pertains to that section we just talked about.
I was trying to just identify the differences, but if you want to have a bit of discussion, we could probably do that right now. Senator Coobley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's just a suggestion that we have a sunset on that provision. Usually when we make changes in sources of funding like that, we put a sunset on it just to see how it goes. I'd suggest June 30th of 2011.
What we might do, I mean, just as discussion points, that we did actually before, is that if we wanted to amend either the House language or the Senate language, we could offer amendments, but not adopt either side at the moment. Now, right now, council isn't here, so because they're off working on amendments, so we may have to hold off on doing something like that.
I do see it in the House language, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so during the ending, I see. So.
To make a comment, I made the first one went through the side by side. It was the Senate language, which is a little more detailed about exceptions and so forth. My question was, is that okay? If I was going to, you know, does that cause any difficulty in what we're trying to do? And I accept the idea. I would tentatively pending discussing with the rest of my conferees, but if we're just putting out opinions. My opinion would be to accept the sunset, but make it a little later than 20. I'd rather have it be 2012 than 2011. I like the idea of looking at it again, but I'd like another year to look at it, I think.
Well, and after we get done with the overall view of administration's budget, I'm sure there's people here who want to comment on that, too, so we'll give them the opportunity to do that. But, yeah, if you've got questions or things you want to point out, this would be a good time to do that. So, anything for the town or anybody, anything else, any questions on the Office of Grants Management? Let's wait till council gets back, and then we can involve them. Okay. Okay. If nothing further on that, let's see. The next item is smart funding. That's a house. A house funded in the Senate or not?
Neither side.
Oh, neither side. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not on the wrong one. Yeah, neither side funded that. Okay. And then, okay, go ahead.
And then the Self Advocacy Network grant, which is in the base of the Department of Administration. The Senate totally eliminated that grant, and the House left it as is in the base.
Not that this was something we wanted to do. We just had to make cuts, and we made them where we had to. So, okay.
And then the next is the Enterprise Performance Improvement Program. This is also a base program, and the Senate totally eliminated the funding for this program.
Okay. Ms. Roberts.
The next item on line 37 is the report on innovation and collaboration. The House has $25,000 in one-time funding for this.
Okay.
You can find it on page R12.
R12, okay. I see, yes. Okay. So, okay, is anybody here from the Department of Administration? Oh, sorry.
I just wanted to just point out on the operating budget reduction.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. There's a difference there, too.
There's a difference there, and the amount that the Senate took was what the governor had recommended, and I believe the House took the governor's recommendations, except not those on the EQB.
Okay.
They left full funding for the EQB.
Okay, so that's why the difference is there. Okay, got it. Okay. Okay, do we have somebody here from administration who wants to just, again, you know, discuss some of the differences, and I think the governor has weighed in on some of his thoughts on this, too. But welcome to the conference committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Sheila Rieger. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Administration. We do have a couple items that we'd like to draw attention to. One is the real property system.
Okay.
And while Nikki Giancola is coming forward, I wanted to mention we also have some language that's proposed relating to demography. So we have Mr. Gillespie here to talk about that. There are some financial implications to that one.
Are you referring to the House language setting up the account, or what exactly are you referring to?
Actually, there's some language proposing some reports that there's a fiscal impact, even though there is no fiscal note filed at this point. Can explain that briefly.
I just wanted to point out that in Senate File 2, the Senate does have some funding for the demographer and the milestones report, and that bill is currently sitting on the Senate floor. So,
I guess that came out of rules today then?
Yes.
Okay. And welcome to the conference committee.
Mr. Chair, members, Nikki Giancola, Assistant Commissioner in the Department of Administration. I just want to make a couple of points. To make sure everybody is clear about this real property system, obviously the Senate position at $0 and no language is the most problematic for us. Again, I've testified to this before, but without funding, this system would need to shut down. And the state has invested over $4 million in this system already. So the investment itself would be sunk without any ongoing means of funding the operating system. It means that agencies would have to revert back to their old ways of managing real property. Understand here that there are over 20 agencies managing over $6 billion in facility-related assets for the state of Minnesota. And what we're simply asking for here is a management tool to be able to better manage that investment and asset. It also represents a miss of over 2 years' worth of work by employees in these agencies. It's thousands of hours of work that they've spent inventorying, planning, coming up with enterprise-type standards and business processes to better manage the state's real estate, and it would mean that the data that's already in the system would become stagnant. It's just a huge missed opportunity here. Obviously, the House position is certainly an option. but it still leaves unresolved the issue of a permanent source of operational funding for this statewide system. And so I would just urge everyone to strongly consider what's happening here if there isn't a means of funding the ongoing operation of this real property system.
Rosen Khan.
Mr. Chairman, how does this fit in with the new things that OEG wants to do, like the improvement to the match system and like the improvement to the and this whole concept of the state data center?
Ms. Kinkle?
Ms. Chairman, Representative Khan, I believe personally that there is tremendous opportunity down the road for integration of the information about our facilities into a statewide procurement system. At this time, there's no direct connection, but we do have OEC representation on our steering team, and it is hosted in the data center on the fifth floor of the Centennial Building, which is managed by OEC.
Could someone from OEC explain how this fits into the new OEC plans, or is it not being considered as part of them? Is there anyone who can? Michael, you're the only one left.
Our representative on the steering team is not here today from OEC, but we do have a project manager from the Office of Enterprise Technology, and they have been supportive of this project. They have helped us develop the standards for the system. They, again, are hosting it, and it's data. It's a repository of data about our buildings, facilities, eventually land, and I do think that there is a connection down the road here. Obviously, if this is lost, though, there isn't. There's no more opportunity for that, and there's a lot of good information. This is a great story. The folks from the agencies that have been working on this project are excited about it. It gives them the tools that they need to better manage the system, and it's very common today to use a technology tool to manage your business in real estate. So we've been a bit behind, but the 2007 appropriation, as well as the money that the agencies kicked in for this, I think is a real strong demonstration that there is potential here, a lot of it. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you give us a little more clarity, I guess, on where you are? So the system is in place, and it's up and running. The application is up and running. You're using it, and you need ongoing money for continuing to feed data into the system, or for maintenance under a contract, or for staff to do it. I guess I'm not clear sort of where this is in the project life cycle and what the money that you need is for exactly.
Ms. Jean Cole.
Ms. Chair, Representative Winkler, the system is implemented. We have spent the last 2 years implementing the first 6 modules, and what we're simply asking for here is the ongoing funding necessary to fund software subscription and maintenance, database administration, and then the network hosting piece. So it was, we got the initial funding in 2007, and this is just to keep it going. It's minimal. It's no more functionality, but it's allowing us to continue to enter data into the system and keep it up, pay for licenses and the subscription costs, those sorts of things.
Mr. Chair, so what is the amount, first, I guess, could you remind us what the dollar amount you're looking for is, and then what you anticipate this will be on an ongoing basis? Because if you're running this for 10 years, this should be part of, you know, your base budget, not just something that you come and ask for every year for the life of the system, you know.
That's exactly it. That's what we're asking for here is permanent funding in place so that we could operate the system. We're asking for approximately 1.7 over the biennium to fund those things that I described. And I did bring along our budget sheet, so if somebody would like to pass this out, it's here. But most certainly what we're after is ongoing funding for the system.
And Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
One clarity. So you'll be looking on an ongoing basis for 1.7 per biennium, or is that sort of an endowment, or how does is this? How long do you need to ask for $850,000 a year? Is it the life of the system? If so, how long is that life cycle?
15 calls.
Chair and Representative Winkler, it is ongoing funding. I would I would estimate that 1.7 would be the permanent base type funding that we would need for the system. But as I said, this doesn't represent any new functionality. And obviously, we've got in mind things like energy down the road and energy management connections, GIS. There's some more robust capital planning and project management that we could add to the system. But this is really just to keep the electrons in order, if you will, to keep the system going. Minimal level, but it is something that we would need to continue funding to keep the system going.
And I,
Representative Holberg?
No, go ahead.
Sorry. Do you have another question, Representative Winkler?
I guess one of the questions you have to keep returning to is what the return on investment is. We know what we've put into it, and as I remember, right, there's a lot of. Part of the sell for this is the efficiency that can be gained by knowing what's out there and making more rational space decisions all across the enterprise and state government. So at some point, it's of course very helpful to know what that has delivered other than a convenient, I guess, the system. If we have to keep putting $850,000 a year into it, it's good to know that we're getting $850,000 worth of value out of it. And I don't know if you have that or you shared it already or we missed it or something, but that would be very helpful to for your case on this.
Ms. Chairman, Representative, we would obviously be coming back to you with results. We, as I said, we've been implementing the system for 2 years. It takes a lot of effort to get your buildings in, your inventory in, set your preventive maintenance standards in the system. But obviously, it is the efficiency. It's being able to make better decisions because you have the information that you need, not just on an agency level, but statewide, so that we can look as a state and say, where could we do things like more efficient leverage purchasing? How many chillers of this type do we have in the state? Where do we have the opportunity to buy in bulk filters or any number of building-related products and services? And so we would expect to come back to you each couple of years or every year and report back on how we're doing. But it is now, it would be a statewide look rather than agency by agency.
Representative Holberg, you had a question?
Mr. Chair, I guess part of my question is already answered in the handout, but it seems to me that if we didn't do this funding, would then the Department of Agriculture or the Department of Natural Resources be required to continue on with some kind of a management of their buildings? Is that correct?
Ms. Chair, Representative Holberg? Yes, the agencies have a variety of, or they had a variety of ways of managing their real property. We had agencies using Blue Line or Excel spreadsheets or access databases all the way up to the larger agencies were using some sort of a mechanized system. If we didn't have the funding, they'd revert back to doing those
Mr. ways. Chairman, it seems to me that you need to ask a question of who is benefiting by this particular proposal. Request for expenditures. And if you look in the back of this thing, there are, 20 agencies that are benefiting by it. And if we don't do it, it's a cost to them automatically. And if it's more efficient for them to do it this way, it seems to me there should be a way of this agency being able to bill back to those agencies the cost of it.
President Gagne, you have a question?
Well, it also, does this also cover rental properties, too? Does this keep track of rental properties?
Ms. Nicole.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, it would. We do not have a leasing module as part of this at this time, but it's clearly an opportunity that could come down the road. What you have right here are the 20 agencies that have custodial control of property in the state right now.
Well,
and some do manage leases.
Well, for, Chairman, one of the things that we heard in terms of from the Department of Revenue was that when they had increased their amount of telecommuting, they closed a whole bunch of rental properties that they had. So it seems to me that maintaining and developing this ought to really pay for itself. It also seems to me that as we look at a lot of these participating agencies, they have, some of them are highly leveraged by funds other than the general fund. And so, for example, if we require them to pay their
share of the real cost of that. You know, we pick up money from some of those, totally justified from some of those funds, like Department of Transportation, Natural Resources,
Human Services,
Human Services, Military Affairs, a lot of, you know, a lot of these that have separate, even Amateur Sports Commission has a lot of separate funding from general fund coming into the state. So it seems to me that some kind of a payback provision would make sense, would be fairer in the budget than just putting out a general fund appropriation and say, we're doing this for all your benefits. So I guess I'd like to direct staff to, you know, and the way we ordinarily do this, we want to make sure the money's there to continue this and to develop the leasing module, and I think we probably ought to, you know, I think the real savings, serious savings from work that we've done in the past of the cost of leasing versus building might be in the leasing. So I think we ought to direct them to develop the leasing model, the leasing module. We ought to certainly make an appropriation, but make it contingent on payback from the agencies, and so put the money out there, but have it come out at no cost to the bill. So still be zero, but have language to make sure that the money is there for them. Anyone understands it?
Okay, well, we'll have the opportunity to work out the language. You just want to make sure I understand what the differences are. So, okay.
I guess we have some language like that in the House bill. It may not have been exactly. It's on R94. And I think the issue, I'm not sure if we're clear enough, reading this, we're clear enough on the funds other than the general fund, but that, and it also doesn't appropriate the money to them up front. The changes I'd like to see is appropriating the money to them up front and getting the payback and emphasizing that the payback where appropriate needs to come from the funds other than the general fund.
Well, since this is a House proposal, I think as we get closer to the time when we make recommendations for the final bill, the House needs to double-check this language and see if it works, and we'll certainly consider what we've just heard and see if the Senate agrees with that.
Okay. Well, although I do think it's helpful as we're going through this, when one sees, I think it's helpful to put them out at the table, on the table, even though they're not in the form of specific.
That's the purpose of going through this right now, to identify where problem areas are, so that when we really get down to decision time, we don't get stuck in issues that should have been raised earlier.
Mr. Chair, can we direct staff to propose some language that, based on our conversation?
Well, again, this is a House language, so if the House wants to modify its proposal, then you should do so. Yes. Other things from the Department Administration and going through your area of the budget, we have spent a lot of the time in this one, but there may be other areas. Again, we're just trying to understand the differences and why there's differences, and if you want to particularly comment on something, we need to know that. So, we have Mr. Gillespie. Did you wish to address the conference committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tom Gillespie. I'm the Minnesota State Demographer in the Department of Administration. Two items in Senate File 2082 relate to the demography office that I would like to specifically address. One is in Section 7 on page R22, which relates to annual long-run forecast in conjunction with the economic forecast in November. And the other is Section 55 requiring milestones report, and that is on page R53 of the statute. These two items have appeared in several different bills and several versions, and have resulted in several different fiscal notes, in part owing to the specific language. The current version for the milestones report would be a bit substantially less costly than and time consuming than some of the previous versions. The some of the previous versions would have required public meetings and things like that, which are substantial effort. The current language would require some increase in staffing on an ongoing basis, but would assume substantial cooperative effort with other organizations, most specifically organizations involved with an effort called Minnesota Compass, which is involved with the Wilder Foundation and the Citizens League and a variety of other organizations, which is a substantially similar effort to Milestones, but there would still be some additional effort required. The first reports that would be required would be this coming January. The economic forecast, the demographic forecast on an annual basis, part of the reason why these represent somewhat of a conflict and an expenditure increase, particularly for time, is that they would both basically have a startup time of this year and require a substantial immediate effort to gear up in a very short period of time. The Senate File 1481, which is also referenced in other references in related in to Senate File 2082. Senate File 1481, which is currently on the floor, I believe, in the Senate, has
Mr. Gillespie, rather than talking about a bill that's not before this conference committee, which it's not, if you've got some issues on Senate File 1481, you need to talk to the Senate author about that, because it's going to be taken up, I think, as early as Monday. But telling the conference committee about something the Senate may or may not be doing next week isn't going to be productive for our time here.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I certainly understand. This has been merely referenced in other references, in terms of the companion bills to Senate File 2082, but language that would start the economic forecast, the demographic forecast in 2010, would November 2010, which is in another version of language, would substantially reduce the amount of conflict in time and startup time, and as a result would reduce the potential fiscal impact of these two items substantially.
Representative Fulberg.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gillespie, are you saying that on lines 18.4 and 18.5 of on page 23, that if the effective date is 2010 instead of 2009, this November, that it gives you time and no additional costs associated with that? The reason I ask that question is because many times the forecast is sure considering demographics in the forecast, and I know you're actively involved in, at least to some extent, in helping to prepare that forecast.
Ms. Leslie.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, that would certainly reduce the fiscal impact. We believe there would still be some ongoing fiscal impact of these two items combined. Would represent a substantial increase in work effort, but it would substantially reduce the fiscal impact that we've noted in various fiscal notes to approximately half of what we had anticipated.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think as we look at the future forecast, this is an important piece of information to have, and I know that your agency and your office is participating in that, but maybe we would direct staff to have just an effective date and to accommodate the request of Mr. Gillespie on that particular portion. The other portion on page 53, the Milestones report, Representative or Mr. Gillespie, I think, isn't that kind of an ongoing thing that you do as well with cooperation with the Department of Administration?
Mr. Chair, Representative Philberg, the milestones is something that was done largely during the Carlson administration and shortly into, I believe it was around 2000 and 2001, that project was ceased and staff commitment to that project ceased. And that is now, there is a report that we prepared on the effort that would be required to reestablish Minnesota milestones. There are other efforts going on in Minnesota at this time that would be substantially similar in nature, and by joining with those other efforts would substantially reduce any kind of staff effort that we and that has been assumed in any kind of fiscal impact, but there would still be a gear up period basically the old milestones is pretty long in tooth right now. It's many of the indicators no longer exist or are substantially different than they were 8 and 9 years ago, and it would require some effort to reestablish that mechanism and have a report prepared by January.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess then just a follow-up. Is there a date specific that would help the administration be able to accomplish this without having a great deal of fiscal implications?
Mr. Gillespie. Mr. Chair, Representative Philberg, there would still be an ongoing effort and the combined effort of those two would these two items would place substantial strain on the existing staff resources of the demography team, which is there's now three of us on an ongoing basis and two people working on 2010 census promotion on a temporary basis.
Okay, anything further from the Department of Administration?
Chair, we have just two quick items.
Yes.
One
forward.
Chairman, before Mr. Gillespie leaves, mm-hmm. I just, not in his position as state demographer, but just as his position as a learned person in the state, I wish he would tell you what he thinks of having a poet laureate in the state.
The bill that was vetoed by the governor, you mean?
No, the bill.
Oh, the other bill. I see. That one. Okay.
The agreement that was eventually made by this conference committee.
Due
to the foresightedness of the Senate chair.
No, the Senate finance chair who needed to get some bonding money for his arts board and promised that in return the Senate conferees would adopt that provision. Is that the one we're talking about?
Well, we're just talking about the existing state law, I think. So
I'm talking about the history of that. Okay, further. Okay. Thank you.
So,
Others from the Department of Education?
Well, I have some comments from Mr. Gillespie.
Do we have anything of interest to the conference committee at this point? Okay, well,
Mr. Gillespie, I've already been reprimanded once for discussing items off of the current...
The item of Poet Laureate is not before this conference committee. And, okay. Thank you. Okay, well, who else we have? Well, welcome to the conference committee. Identify yourself for the record.
Chairman Betzel, Representative Kahn, and members of the committee. I'm Dave Fielding, Director of Plan Management, and I'm here this morning to speak to the issue of the difference in lieu of rent requests. The House has carried our request. The Senate has not. Testified before Senator Betzel's committee recently on this, and so I won't go through the background on the justification, but what I felt compelled to make everyone aware of is that in the absence of receiving the funding, just what the implications will be. The only way that we can offset the $500,000 a year that's being requested here is basically through labor. Half of the money is in ceremonial grounds, repairs to the grounds, and so you can expect over time where there are areas that reach, and we've got some that are very close now, reach the point of being unsafe, we're simply going to have to barricade them off. With respect to labor, which is the other half of the $500,000 a year, that will require us to reduce our janitorial staff, our evening janitorial staff, by 20%. That means there will be five fewer cleaners attending to this building and the Capitol building each evening, and we'll have to reduce one full-time position in our groundskeeping staff, which will obviously have an impact on our ability to maintain the lawns, memorials, etc. I just think it's important that everyone understands that, because that's how we will achieve the reduction if we don't receive the increase.
Thank you, Mr. Fielding. Any questions? Representative Kahn?
That's so we can book the naming rights and the advertising on fences and so forth.
I thought we didn't have a number for that.
Oh, we didn't.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions?
Doesn't mean we couldn't put one in.
Okay. You have, Sarah?
Mr. Chairman, I know we have to make cuts that I don't like, but I hope that the ones that affect the operation of the buildings in the Capitol complex are ones that eventually will be able, before Thursday, to take care of. I mean, we can't get the money to fix the Capitol, but by God, we ought to keep it clean, you know, and working.
Well, that's why we're going overall, generally, through the the agency just to see where the major differences are, so we know where the play could be there. You had one other person you wanted to testify?
Just one last thing, Mr. Chair,
sure.
Members. The program, the continuous improvement program that we have at the Department of Administration, commonly referred to as LEAN program,
right,
training and facilitation, is really an outstanding program. It's a staff of one person, actually, and some part-time student worker help. And they have really done a remarkable job coordinating within state agencies and achieving some real efficiencies. There have been 13 state agencies that have been involved and over 600 employees to date. And some of the achievements that they have done to really reduce waste out there in some of the programs in the agencies are remarkable. And I just wanted to really end on that note. And as our Commissioner Dana Badgerow has commonly said, there's really two programs in admin that are the biggest bang for the buck, one being the grants management program, which we talked about, you spoke of earlier, and the other being this lean quality improvement, continuous improvement program. I know we've spoken about it in the past, but just wanted to leave that last plug if I could.
And we're trying to, again, figure out what we can and cannot do also. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm kind of wondering, when we're talking about programs like this, do we have documentation of, obviously, if we're promoting operational efficiency, improving services, and lowering operational costs, do we have any documentation where we can say, okay, we saved this much money, therefore, if we're putting the money in up front, where are our documentation that we're saving it so that we know that it's of the value?
Mr. Chair, Senator, we have lots of documentation about the waste that's been reduced and the process improvement time and so forth. We have an entire website, actually, dedicated to the specific projects where there are pictures and graphs and charts and so forth. One of the things that has really made the program successful is that we aren't asking folks to identify and return money. It's a common practice where agencies really are starting to get afraid to make improvements for fear that that money will be, as you all know. However, agencies have suffered cuts for the last many years, and this is providing them an opportunity to allow us to no longer fill some of those vacancies. So while we're not necessarily identifying funds to return, we are identifying ways to continue programs at their current rates, that are basically providing the same kinds of levels of service that we've wanted to continue.
Senator Dunbar.
And thank you again, Mr. Chair. And it's good to know, I mean, as legislators, we try to follow as many things as we can. So I guess as we're looking through some of these things, it'd be nice to have some bullet points that really, you know, show us and give us that direction. I guess this year it's been much harder for myself. I try to get a bigger picture, and I try to study so many things in these lean years, if you will. So when you come up with a lean program, I guess if you could provide some of that as we're looking through this process, and also back on even Capitol grounds and things and taking care of stuff. I would second what Senator Rest said. Is I'm very proud of the way the people work here, and it's one place that I've seen in public that this Capitol complex has always been a place that the public can come, and you can be proud of the way it looks when you come here, and I think it should be that way. It is one of our biggest assets to the state of Minnesota, and ought to be kept up that way. So I hope people kind of keep that in mind, too, as we're looking at some of these issues.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for those comments, Senator Jungbauer. And I also am a big fan, as you know, of the Lean program. And we have had presentations on it in the State and Local Government Operations Oversight Committee. Senator Jungbauer, and you're not a member of that, of the Oversight Committee, but certainly Senator Olsen and Senator Betzel are, and I don't know whether they did in the State and Local Government Operations Committee in the House. Representative Ryan or Winkler, you're on that committee, whether you had that presentation there, but it's very impressive, that process, that ongoing process that they have, and the points at which they bring a particular project to a close, and where they try and apply that process, and they do have just remarkable documentation of it, and it was with deep regret that it's included, cutting it is included in the Senate bill. It would be one of the, that and the grants management and the money to take care of the Capitol complex would certainly be priorities, the small priorities, because not a whole lot of money of mine to move off of the Senate position, quite frankly. But anyway, tough choices.
Ms. Rieger.
Mr. Chair, Senator, you have a few examples with me here on the Lean program. I'm happy to go over those briefly, or I can follow up. Which would you prefer?
Well, actually, and we're not quite done with you yet, because members, if you just flip the page over, this might tie into what you want to talk about, Ms. Rieger. As long as you're here, we might as well talk about the revenue changes that are towards the bottom on the second page, and that it deals with facility repair replacement, it deals with, you know, some of the other issues. So maybe we can talk about some of the other issues with admin. I think that ties into something you wish to talk about. So, Mr. Lindeen?
Okay, yes. If you look on the back side on line 113, there's a fund transfer. Actually coming out of the facility repairs and replacement account, this is essentially the asset preservation account that is funded through a portion of the rent dollars that state agencies pay from state buildings. And what the Senate is doing is taking a one-time transfer out of that account in fiscal year 10 of just slightly more than $2 million. And then we're actually eliminating the account. We're changing the statutory language and just having all those dollars that are collected for this function instead be fully diverted into the general fund. I think in current statute, 50% go to the general fund, so this will send everything to the general fund.
Ms. Rieger, and this, you may have wanted to comment on something different, but let's finish up here. What you want to talk about, including this issue? Ms. Rieger?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, Dave Fielding,
okay, Ms.
Fielding. Very much like to address
Fielding.
That.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this is an account which had its origins back in roughly 10 years ago, because at the time the ability to secure funding to deal with planned replacement deficiencies was limited to the capital process in securing money through asset preservation and the CAPR account. And quite often, that process was slow. In many cases, the funding was not available. I'm reminded every time I consider this potential loss of funding to take a look over at the Department of Transportation building, which now has scaffolding in front. It took us 7 cycles to get the money to do that work, and quite frankly, I think it would have taken more had it not been for a notice from the Department of Labor and Industry that the building was unsafe. So looking forward to a proposal here where we have literally no money to draw upon to deal with emergencies, money to draw upon to deal with opportunities in terms of energy efficiency, or money to plan replacement of major building systems, HVAC systems, lighting upgrades, etc., and to put us back into a point where we were 10 years ago, where we have to come back to this body each and every year with the uncertainty of whether any money is going to become available, quite frankly, in my position with my accountability, is not something that I personally want to be involved in. It's an accountability without the ability to deal with the responsibility. There are differences when you have programs that can be deferred. Maintenance cannot be deferred, should not be deferred. The impact on the reliability of buildings is obvious. We're dealing with that, obviously, over at the Capitol now. We were successful, thanks to many of the members here today, in getting money in the last session to provide at least a resource for us to deal with the most pressing issues over there, but there's an enormous amount of additional work to be done. And it seems to me that taking this money away, putting it back into the general fund, implies that it will be spent. I'm going to be coming back here asking for that money back, and that seems to me to be an increase in the cost of government. I don't know that that's why we're here. So I would request that at least on the Senate side of this, a serious consideration be given on this proposal for reducing or eliminating the FR&R account be restored. If we have to give some money to get the things to balance this time, the one-time removal is certainly something that we can work with. But taking away the ongoing funding is something that I think we cannot.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Fielding? Representative Kahn.
As I understand it, is that really related to the Senate position that took all the language out besides part of the money? So the Senate only didn't take all the money this year, but did take the language out, which
that's correct.
In the future years. So this is, again, the other problem that we deal with, which is the sanctity of tails. I guess you did that because of trying to control the tails, and I think we need to do something that kind of keeps the money in place, maybe allows a little bit more access if we have to in the tails to take money out of it, and perhaps I gather that you can live with the Senate's cut to this year's
representative.
I mean, you'd rather not have it, but I gather that that's not as serious as the removal of the language.
Well, Representative, I have a project list, ready to go that it exceeds the dollar value that's going to be taken away. But that's not to say that waiting a year is going to be a problem. But taking away the opportunity to plan going forward is a problem. So, yes, we can live with that reduction if we have to.
Well, the legislature passed the law this session. It was signed by the governor. It was meant to basically allow us to avoid using stimulus money for the budget reserves because federal law didn't allow that. But there was a floor amendment that was adopted by the Senate, and the bill was signed by the governor that said that we had to have balanced budgets for the next two, for this biennium and the following one. And so this is part of our balancing the budget for the next biennium.
Well,
we don't like it, but that was the requirement that was put on us.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's not unheard of to have a later bill change what happened in an earlier bill.
Oh, I have.
You've seen that happen before.
I have, but I have to deal with the law as we have it today, not as it might happen in the future.
Well, the language can be put in so that the future is changed in this bill, which is the bill that does deal with the basic budget issues.
I understand. I know what our constitutional requirement is, and I know what the law that we agreed to also is as well, too.
Mr. Chairman, it appears to me on 114, line 114, that it is in the future of taking of the bill. It's taking it in 10 and 11 the fiscal year. So it appears to me that, unless I'm reading this wrong, that it's not a one-time transfer, but it's the whole thing that's in there, the $10.3 million.
Mr. Lindeen, could you?
What we're showing here are just the 10 and 11 numbers. We don't have the tail showing. If you go to the more detailed sheet, but we are tracking the 8.1 million in the tail. So,
my question needs to be then, what is left in that for the, after you take out the 8.1?
The 8.1 represents the amount of new money that will be coming into the fund.
Okay.
I believe there's probably...
Is that from rent?
That is coming in from
okay.
the rent.
Okay.
So that's what's estimated for 10 and 11
okay.
and going forward. And then there is an account balance, I think, last time I looked, somewhere around $7 million or something in there. I guess I'll ask the staff from admin if they have the exact amount that's in that account.
The accounting that I received yesterday from my staff shows a balance at the end of 2009 of 4.5.
Okay, Senator Jungbauer.
That represents, pardon me, that probably represents projects that we have approved or which are encumbered currently.
Yeah, I think when I was looking at it, it was an unobligated balance of the time we were putting the bill together. So
if I can follow up on it,
over,
then,
yeah.
If we did do that and you take the 2.1, you'd have an operating balance left that could be carried forward, I understand, of about 2.4, is that correct? And then the 8.1 is what is expected to come in for the 10 and 11 year. And so then if we didn't eliminate the program, you would have to, over the 2 years, operate under with an appropriation of 2.1, and then the following biennium it would go back into the fund again at about $8 million a year. Is that a correct assumption?
Not according to what we have in the Senate bill.
I understand that, but I'm saying if we did not do the complete elimination, that would be the flow of the dollars.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything further? Does the Department of Administration have anything further to bring to our attention?
I don't think so, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Reeder. Attorney General Bauer?
Clarification on that, and then another question, I guess. The way I understood it is we're taking the money now, and we're taking the money into perpetuity, literally, aren't we?
Yeah.
So
going into the general fund.
Yes, forever. The black hole of the general fund. Okay, so understanding that, and Mr. Chair, thank you, and members, when you look at this, there seems to be a lot of correlation between a number of these things, and since I've been here my 7 years, this is one thing that's kind of bothered me, is government, we don't operate like the real world, and part of this real property system, what I see in terms of how it does help is coming out of the real estate, engineering, and commercial construction business. Big businesses have these kind of tracking systems so that the maintenance is up there on your screen continuously. You can budget things, you know all the properties that you have, you know what their needs are, and it just seems like we're not ever dealing with them in terms of government until things become a crisis, that we take the money without actually seeing the needs to fix things and keep them going. And I'll just try to put a simple visual. If your roof needs to be replaced and you wait an extra year, you could damage the structure because you didn't replace the roof when it needed to go. So if we, in fact, are protecting our constituents, protecting the taxpayers in Minnesota, we need to keep this on a rotation basis, and it actually does save money long-term. Instead, as I'm seeing it, and admin can comment on this, is by deferring things, we are actually exponentially increasing the cost, so we're, by jockeying the money today, we're hurting things worse. Am I not following this, or is that what we're doing?
Well, Senator Jungbauer, I think when you try to run government on the cheap, you get bad results. And I think you see it in many areas.
Let's hope, Mr. Chair, we're finally getting the right tool to run it right.
Mm-hmm.
And right in the middle of that, we're saying, well, we're going to stop and take a time out here, even though we're heading in the right direction, we're going to take a time out and go backwards.
Well, whether you look at it in this budget area or other budget areas, there are long-term consequences to short-term cuts.
And the government on the Jeep, would that be like the Health and Human Services budget that keeps exponentially increasing, though?
In a lot of areas of the budget, when you try to do things on the Jeep, you're going to pay for it in the long term. You are exactly correct.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Solberg,
I just asked the question because I wanted some clarification on it, and because it is a Senate proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to understand what the Senate proposal was.
You like it, don't you?
Okay.
Chair, if I may, thank you. One other thing to point out for those that may not be aware, when this account was set up in 98, 100% of this money was coming for the purpose of FR&R. And in 2003-2004, when we had a balancing problem, 50% of it went into the general fund. What we're doing now is we're simply completing that process for what apparently is the same reason. The impact, I think, will be devastating.
Mr. Chairman, just one... I don't want to beat a dead horse, but how much has been appropriated into the CAPRA accounts this last year?
Mr. Bailey.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think the money that was approved last session for the highest priority repair was 13.4.
And Mr. Chairman, was that all used on the dome?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Wayne Waslowski, who is recovering from hip surgery, is the one with the best information.
Well, if we can just get what kind of a balance I'm looking at has been there on that, or has it all been spent?
Okay. Welcome to the conference committee. We appreciate the effort you made to get here.
Mr. Chair,
please identify yourself for the record. Yeah.
Sorry for the performance.
Representative
Solberg, the balance in the CAPRA account is 3.4, which is the same amount that was appropriated. We had some funding left over from past appropriations. I wouldn't mind that the CAPRA account is the statewide emergency account, so that applies to the 20 agencies that Ms. Giancola referenced, in 5,000 buildings and 27 million square feet of space. So it's inevitable that we're going to have emergencies that pop up for that account.
But 3.4 is the balance after, but we did appropriate 13.4.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, that's actually for the state capitol building, and that's a significant amount of that. Approximately $6 million is going to go for the dome repair, and then we're also looking at the internal rain leaders and plumbing stacks.
Thank you. Thanks.
Anything else you want to tell us while you're down here? I mean, I don't want to have to come back.
Mr. Chair, members, if you want to talk land sales, we could always do that.
Mr. Chair? Oh, well, okay. Well, why don't you talk about it? I mean, I don't want you to come back. We do have a right. No. You made the effort. We do, on the revenue changes, there are land sales date extension to 2010, and that's a House position. Could you kind of...
Mine is that?
Well, if you look on the back page, it's line 111 and 112 we're talking about. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, this originated in 2005. There was a requirement for Commissioner of Administration to work with state agencies to identify and sell $6.44 million worth of surplus real estate. And this actually followed the 2003 law, where we had a similar provision that required us to sell 5.505. Since 2003, we've sold over and deposited over $15 million to the general fund. We've sold over 60 parcels of real estate. However, a lot of that occurred in the FY 2004-05 biennium. We are approximately $4 million short of meeting the current 644 requirement. Now, Department of Natural Resources has a fairly significant land sale that they've scheduled for May of this year. However, there are provisions in, I believe, in both the Senate and House that would prohibit the Department of Natural Resources from selling certain types of properties to go to the land sale requirement. There's also a provision that would prohibit us from selling a parcel that we identified up at Anoka at the Regional Treatment Center as surplus property. So we're starting to see some restrictions that could significantly impact our ability to ever meet the landfill requirement.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, thank you. When you talked about the $13 million on the capital, could you just briefly talk about where the funding source is coming for the MnDOT building?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, I'm going to try to get this right. I think it was the truck highway bond funds that we finally settled on. Unfortunately, on that project, the bids came in, proposals actually, we went through a best value selection process. Proposals came in significantly less than estimates, and we're currently indicating $7 million of that appropriation is not needed for repairing that facility.
Oh, that's good news.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, if nothing further from Department Administration, thank you. I indicated I neglected to ask if anybody from the Attorney General's office wanted to speak, but as I say, I think we understand the differences between the House and the Senate bill. There's both had the 5% reduction, and the differences in the House position was just partial funding of Senate House File 7 and House File 8, but if there's no need to add anything beyond to our understanding of that. I'd like to just put in a holding pattern at the moment. We'll pick up the discussion with the Department of Finance in a moment. I'm informed Mr. Shepard has the amendment that has been reviewed by the interested groups going back to the e-licensing issue. So if we could revert back to that, then maybe we can finish up the section on e-licensing. And again, that's on page R57. So after we get this handed out, perhaps Mr. Shepard or Mr. Bodden can tell us just what the A42 amendment does. Mr. Meilenberg, if you wanted to come forward as well, too.
Mr. Chair, members, and perhaps Mr. Meilenberg and Ms. Reed may want to comment on some of the things that we changed. We talked to Mr. Bodden and I talked with the representatives from the Commerce Department and some of the interested licensees, as well as the Office of Enterprise Technology and the Department of Finance, and we think that we have this worked out so that everybody agrees to it. Please note there's one handwritten change on page 3, line 27, where the words incurred by or stricken and the word of is written in place there. And I don't know if perhaps Mr. Meilenberg wanted to walk through some of the changes.
Go ahead, Mr. Meilenberg.
Mr. Chair, members, this new language incorporates the concepts and the language and ideas that were all discussed earlier this morning. It includes language that allows the health boards to transfer funds from their surplus licensing revenues to OET for the purpose of replacing the surcharge. It also includes language that is agreeable to both the commerce license holders and the Department of Commerce that addresses their concerns. And lastly, just to address the final change on line 3.27, that was a matter of timing. It was changed from incurred by to of to allow the funds to be transferred from the Department of Commerce to OET so that the licenses didn't have to be migrated to the system first and the work didn't have to be started or completed prior to the transfer of the funds. It allows OET to have the money in order to begin the work and to pay the vendor so we can complete the work.
Ms. Reed, did you have anything further? Okay. Is there anybody in discussion, any questions on the amendment? Is there anybody who wants to be heard on the amendment? It's my understanding that the interested groups have had a chance to review this, and has anybody got any issues they have with it? Okay, come on forward. Right now is the time. Okay, if anybody's got any questions now or concerns, now is the time to discuss it. I don't see anybody coming forward. Representative Khan moves the A42 amendment, which would then be replacing both the House and the Senate language on e-licensing. Is there discussion on the A42 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, Motion is there. 842 amendments adopted. Thank you, Mr. Shepherd, Mr. Bodern. Thank you, Mr. Meilenberg, and others who worked on this. Thank you very much. Okay, let's go back to the budget sheet. We're now at the finance department, or Minnesota Management Budget. It looks like both have the 5% reduction, but then obviously there's some differences beyond that. Mr. Lundin and Ms. Roberts, could you tell us what the differences are?
Okay. The first difference is the Senate eliminated the general fund base appropriation, base funding for the management analysis and development division of the department. The next item is the stimulus funds reporting and oversight. The House included $500,000 there, and I should just as an aside say the Senate did include funding as we talked about in Senate File 1938. And then the federal stimulus match contingency, the Senate did not provide any funding for that. The House provided $1,775,000. And then the financial oversight and assistance, this had to do with the internal auditing. The House did provide funding, the $1,024,000, and I should say the Senate did provide the same amount of funding in Senator Cohen's Senate File 2, which is sitting on the Senate floor.
Okay, and it's my understanding Senate File 2 came out of the Rules Committee today, so it'd probably be given a second reading on Tuesday and Monday, and then this could be taken up as early as Tuesday. Does anybody from the Department of Finance...
And Mr. Chairman, that would then give us a Senate position on all of
yes.
that?
Yes. Yeah, we have no Senate position on this right now, but we would have that after the Senate takes a vote on those issues. Does anybody from the Department of Finance wish to comment, again, just on the differences here? Come on forward. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Member Stephanie Andrews, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Finance. We are... I think a letter was delivered yesterday to the committee chairs, and I don't know if that's made its way around to everybody yet, but we'll make sure that you get copies if you don't have them now. Basically, the items that we highlighted there are the differences that you have in your spreadsheet. Let me first talk about the reduction to management analysis and development general fund. This provision in the Senate bill eliminates the $340,000 a year general fund appropriation to MAD. Just a reminder for those of you who aren't familiar with what management analysis and development does. It's basically the state's in-house consulting and training group. There are 23 people in that group. They provide fee-for-service consulting activities to state agencies, also other public employers, higher education, local governments at times. And management analysis also has this small general fund piece of their budget. They basically started out in the 1980s as a general fund activity, and over time have moved more and more towards the fee-for-service activity. And so for the most part, in a $5 million revolving fund or overall budget, most of that is revolving fund from fees from clients, and then the $680,000 to the biennium is the remaining portion of the general fund. What that money does basically is support activities that are often too small for an agency to enter into a contract for. Also supports requests from the legislature for various activities, studies that they want done. The House bill, for example, in front of you, asks MAD to look at co-location of the minority councils. And that kind of activity is something that MAD throughout the years has done. With the elimination of the general fund appropriation, they wouldn't be able to do those kind of things anymore. They also,
which by the way, as my understanding, the Economic Development Conference Committee has already adopted that provision. Okay.
They also, Mr. Chair, are involved in staffing the gubernatorial transition when a new governor comes in, an important part of their work there. And so just a word on their business model, because they primarily, again, are fee for service, they use this money, however, to help them do those smaller activities, but also if this money was eliminated, they would need to lay off, they estimate 20% of their staff, 3 to 4 people. Those people bring in revenue, and so when you lay off those people, they estimate an additional $850,000 for the biennium that would go with those people, which would create something of a death spiral for management analysis, and they're tremendously concerned that if this general fund appropriation goes away, they would not be viable anymore. And so we are tremendously concerned about that reduction. There are no questions on management analysis.
Let me also point out, if you go to the back side of the page, on page line 87, I should call this to your attention, too, because this is within finance, municipal management budget, maps replacement, as Deputy Commissioner Andrews mentioned, the Senate did not fund it, but the House, did Mr. Lundin or Ms. Roberts?
The House actually delayed the funding 1 year, okay. So it starts in fiscal year 11, not fiscal year 10.
Gotcha, okay. Ms. Anders, go ahead.
Mr. Chair?
Thing.
I had a question. If you said three staff members, there'd be a loss of about $850,000 or so. So if there's 23 people, averaging probably about $300,000 per person, so what are you booking that revenue as, or where does that end up? Because tell me if I did the math wrong, but if you're producing revenue from those folks, where does that money go?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsheen, if you go back to the budget pages, which you probably don't have in front of you, but basically that money goes into a revolving fund, so it's not general fund money that comes in. It's money, again, to support that activity.
A follow-up, if I may. Do you keep a portion of it out to cover your costs so they're basically self-funded or not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsheen, they're self-funded except for this $340,000 a year that the Senate bill reduces or eliminates.
Okay. Commissioner, anything further you want to bring to our attention?
Mr. Chair, yes, I do. Okay. We've, I think, already covered the stimulus funding, and so I won't talk about that anymore. Again, the governor recommended a $1.6 million appropriation. We are appreciative of the money coming forward in 09. That's especially important. I just want to remind everybody that the first reporting deadline is July of this year, and so we are eager to get going on that and again, really look to you for help on getting as much as we can in that funding so that we can make sure that we're maximizing federal funds and meeting the requirements. We haven't, however, I think, talked about the contingency, the federal stimulus match contingency. So just briefly, the governor's recommendation was for $5 million in the general contingency. You know that the base for that is $500,000, and so this would be a fairly significant increase. The philosophy behind the governor's recommendation there was to make sure that there was money available should we get further information on needed match as we get more information about the federal stimulus funds. And so that isn't necessarily related to any specific requests that we know of, but again, it's trying to make sure that there's ultimate flexibility coming in if after we close up session, something else happens and somebody needs to get moving right away. The governor recommends $5 million there, and the House has the $1.775 allocated to that. Then finally, under the financial oversight and assistance, we appreciate the House's $1 million there. The governor asked for slightly more than that. Basically, the governor's recommendation was in two parts. The House funds the financial oversight piece of it, directly related to accounting and financial management services. There was also a piece for $300,000 about for debt management oversight. The OLA, as you know, we've been discussing some of the OLA findings on the financial side. We also had some discussion about the capital recommendations or the capital findings that they had in an OLA report, and we had requested $376,000 to move forward with correcting some of those issues. We'll certainly continue to try to do as much as we can on that without this funding, but our ability to go as far as we would like and to meet all the recommendations of the OLA report will probably not be possible without full funding of this initiative.
Yeah, and as Mr. Lundin indicated, the federal oversight and assistance is part of Senate File 2, which, again, should be coming up soon in the Senate, so that's why we don't have a Senate position there. So. Any questions of Commissioner Andrews?
You know that the issue of MAP funding is a problem, and I know that the Senate totally eliminated it and the House delayed it for a year, and I know that you'd like to really have the full funding. But assuming that we can't get the full funding, is the delay for the year reasonable, or would you be better off getting it now and trying to figure out how the next year amounts of money is going to come in next year?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, both options are not good.
I know.
I know that you know that. I'm not sure which is less bad. The situation of where we are now, we have had vendors coming in for the last week to talk with us about to respond to the RFP that was issued in January. And so our vendors have spent a tremendous amount of time and money. Our state staff, from 130 people, have spent a tremendous amount of time and therefore money. Also looking at those responses and responding to those, considering which of those would be most appropriate for a new system. And so any delay really puts much of that work to waste. We would not be able to sign a contract without the full funding of the lease purchase recommendation. So I think that if it was only part of the money appropriated in 10, we still wouldn't be able to go forward. And another year of risk for the system is, we believe, truly puts the state in jeopardy.
Mr. Chairman, this is one of the problems that we have in the same place, even though I'm obviously not know even less about that issue than this issue, is in health funding, where you have this sense that, you know, I've had people in state government tell me that when MAPS is in place, we'll save tens of millions of dollars on procurement. But the inability to book that is frustrating to how we do it. But the vendors, it seems to me, you know, and I don't know what is going to happen, if anything is going to happen for us to be able to do the full funding here. It really seems that stopping this in the middle is almost as bad as it would be if we were to stop the integrated tax system in the middle. But isn't there some ability to sign a contract that would be based on the future spending from it? Remember, I'm starting with agreement with your point that it would be best to put the full funding in. But I don't know where this division is going to find that extra $8 million, you know, whatever it is, in the budget. And so what's the, you know, you have, should we go with the Senate position of nothing, or should we go with the House position, and what's the best way of modifying the House position so that something can be done? I mean, clearly it's of advantage to the vendors to get these contracts. And if vendors are in competition with each other to do it, it seems to me that they might, and they ought to have a better understanding than us of what the state is likely to save, when this is in place. Isn't there some way to put that into the negotiation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tan, I think that the problem comes with the way the lease purchase arrangement is because we don't have a direct fund appropriation, and so in that instance, we would have more flexibility about what you would do with future years. But because the lease purchase, which brings the cost down from the $70 million to the $17 million, it basically puts that instrument out to the capital markets and says, invest in this. If there isn't money invested in more than a year, we really don't believe that anybody would be interested in doing that. The key thing about, from our bond counsel's opinion and from Ms. Cardell's view of this, is that the reason why integrated tax and MAPS are viable systems to fund with a lease purchase arrangement is because they are core fundamental systems that we know that state government has to have running. Without, in fact, that assurance from the legislature that they are moving forward, we don't believe it will be a viable financing tool. And so you'll be looking more at, funding the full cost of the system rather than using that option. I can certainly assure you, and again, we appreciate the committee's on both sides support and understanding of the importance of this project. We looked at as many options as we could possibly think of, and a few more that probably were wacky enough to say we shouldn't have even been talking about them. This was the best one that we came up with, and so I don't know that there's a way to do it a lot cheaper, but I certainly understand the dilemma that you're in.
We're not looking at doing it cheaper. We're looking at a different funding scheme to pay back. And, when you start out with saying this is basic core functions of government, and it's clear that we need it, you know, it's clear that over the time it's going to take to be paid back, and isn't there some way of paying it back more slowly than the lease purchase, arrangement? I mean, I don't really,
I find it difficult to understand the argument that if we did the full appropriation out front, it would be possible to phase it, but that it's not possible to phase it with the lease purchase.
Representative Dowdy. Mm-hmm. Joseph, do you want to weigh in?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, my questions are very similar to Representative Collins, but if I could just perhaps continue. I want to be clear, if you're referring to the Senate proposal as compared to the House, I would share Representative Kahn's question as to if the start date of the appropriation is simply pushed back a year, would that not still allow you, and the commitment to the out years is there, would that not still allow you to get started this year with a reasonably, I mean, this wouldn't be that creative in the private sector to, you know, have some kind of an upfront payment stream that's smaller and it's, you know, ballooning at the end. Under the House plan, is there also no way to even get started?
Wish I had her.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, I don't know. We'd need to go back and look at that. It's certainly the problem is that if you look at the MAPS project, a great deal of the funding for that project comes in not only the vendor fees, the consultant fees, not only the hardware, but also in the staffing that needs to be hired for that. We would have some difficulty doing that. I'm not sure that it would be possible. But let me go back and look at that. We certainly are interested in talking with you. My largest concern is we have a system that is I'm concerned about another year. It might be fine. I don't know that it will be. And so we're concerned about waiting a year for that. I'm also concerned about taking what we now know about staff, the kind of staff have put in, we're looking at proposals and putting that off. So we would need to consider that.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Dowdy. Representative Dowdy.
So an idea that's been bouncing around in my head, because I've offered numerous amendments in committee and on the House floor to try and find some kind of an appropriation for this first fiscal year that would at least allow the momentum to continue at some level and not waste the effort that's been generated to date. And I guess an idea bouncing around my head is if we have the 8,900 right now in the House, or 8.9 million, excuse me, in the House proposal for next fiscal year. If we split that in half and funded it halfway, would that allow creative financial, lease purchase provisions to be entered into? So anyway, just asking for some creativity and some suggestions back, perhaps. And if I could just close with a comment, Mr. Chair, I'm just detecting a trend here in the Senate proposal that seems to really shortchange strategic initiatives that I would say pretty clearly have a return on investment. And granted, we've all talked about the challenges of trying to book that return, and I think there's some ways we could try and get at that in the future. But the executive branch agencies, it appears to me, in my short time here, have made a lot of progress in the last period of time, adopting professional management practices, streamlining, improving customer service, reducing costs, reducing headcount, and that we would kind of gut so many of those initiatives midstream or right in the middle of their planning and not avail ourselves of that future return on investment. And I said this on the House floor, I think every single one of us came here this year with a reform mandate from the electorate, and that we would just shut down every reform element and every return on investment proposal in the executive branch agencies would be a huge mistake. So somehow I think we need to move more in the direction of the House proposal and the governor's proposal on these more strategic initiatives and not shortchange ourselves.
Representative Downey, let me just point out, in the last biennium 2 years ago, the Senate's proposal was to fully fund MAPS. And we actually came up with a proposal to do it. And it was the administration that decided that they couldn't do the full job, that they wanted to just kind of put some temporary funding in there to kind of keep it going for another 2 years. So when I said when you run government on the cheap, this is what you get, we tried. We really tried. And we did not get the support from the executive branch. Representative Kahn.
Well, there are one thing I do know that Mr. Connor and Commissioner Hansen both went to Washington to talk to the administration, who's gotten a lot of interest in
cyber infrastructure, particularly security and so forth. You know, is there any chance that we can be looking at some federal funding that will help the states out with this? Because this is clearly has to be related to when the MAPS is in place. It would clearly be related to initiatives such as that. And I know, you know, this. I know that these meetings are just occurring, but it seems to me, is there going to be some indication that that would be a possibility? And then the one point I'd like to make while I have the microphone is that if you didn't change your name, I'm sure this would all work out. People would have much more confidence in your stability.
Or, or her husband could change his name.
We don't know. Mr. Chair, Representative, I hope that's talking about the department and not myself.
The department.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Khan, we would love to be able to say that the federal stimulus funds are going to help us out here. I don't think that they will. In part, we have a timing problem. We, again, are looking at a two-year project. The stimulus activity, as you know, is heavily concentrated in the next 2 to 3 years, and so we really don't, we think, have the ability to do that. We've also found, I think, at the LCTST conversation yesterday, we presented some information showing that we think that MAPS can actually do what it needs to do for the federal reporting. And so that's the good news. It doesn't, however, provide the kind of thing that we're hoping that a new MAPS would be able to do in terms of web-based access and all of those things that people really do expect of a basic system. And so we'll cobble things together to do that in the short term, but unfortunately I think the federal stimulus funds aren't going to be helpful here.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm talking about the possibility of new proposals that would specifically be dealing with cyber issues and with information management issues, which the last ones clearly didn't. I don't know how long it's going to take for that to be fully fleshed out, but if something like that is happening, I think that would clearly suggest that the funding not be delayed a year, but be distributed, you know, in a way that, if there's any way to kind of make that work.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
General Thien?
Two things. One would be to Representative Downey. You know, it's interesting, the Department of Vehicle Services is able to replace a $50 million legacy computer system because we put a technology access fee on all motor vehicles transactions. You know, and we just talked about this e-licensing where there's a $5 to $150 fee to pay for it, but for MAPS we can't do that, you know. But so we have done things in this state to replace some of these systems, but my question is, we heard testimony earlier that on the Department of the Highway Department that the bids were coming in about half what they were estimated. And if it sticks in my mind, I thought this thing was like $6 million for hardware and $44 million for vendor costs. With our economy the way it is, has that number changed at all? Because I would think there'd be people that would be, it might be a good time to be purchasing something, and I'm just wondering if some of those estimates might be lowered.
For sure.
Mr. Chair, Senator Alcine, we are at the point where we are looking at proposals. I am not privy, nor do I want to be, to any of the information, so I can't tell you what the specific proposals have within them. There are probably some people in the room that have closer to that information than I am. So until we get to the point of actually doing negotiations and looking at the actual dollars, we don't know.
Mr. Chair, one follow-up, if I may. One thing that strikes me is, you know, that $44 million of this is for the software work and hardly any of, just a small percentage is the actual hardware. But my understanding is that there are people within the state that are computer experts in various areas and they cross over to different departments sometimes to work on computers that their expertise is in. Is there any thought of, you know, I know we've got to hire contractors for certain parts of it, but is there any thought of building more of this internally to the extent possible?
Fisher.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, the project has been very careful about looking at just that, those options. And so as we've been designing the project, it's a team of 100 people split between 65 and 35 state staff and contractors. And so we're doing what we can to bring in what we need to have to put the product in place. But we are also trying to be sure that we have enough people that we're using from state agencies so that whatever knowledge is picked up on the project goes back to the state agencies when it's done. So we very much have been trying to use a mixed approach to that.
I guess I need a follow-up to that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in my thinking on this would be that would greatly affect the bid prices or the estimates. If you've got that many state employees, how do you separate if, you know, if somebody's a state employee is building part of it and a contractor right next to them is building another part? How do you differentiate and how does that build out differently? And all those kinds of questions. I think in the light of the times that we're in with such money problems, that maybe a revised type estimate that really takes into account more definitively the state employee's value to the project.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, they're tremendously valuable to the project, so I hope nothing I said left you with any other impression. However, we're looking at whatever product we end up choosing. We are looking at a very specific product and an implementation process that our staff don't have the expertise to do, nor do they need to. We're talking to this, they don't need on an ongoing basis to always be at that level of expertise. And so, again, we're trying to be sure that we're bringing in people for the part we don't know and for the very accomplished professionals we have throughout state government, moving them into the project team so that they can both help out the contractors and also take the information back to their agency when the project is all done.
Apparently some of the House members do need to take a recess for a meeting here. As I say, we will adjourn today by 4 o'clock. So I'm going to declare a recess here so that the House members can... I see. Okay. Just selected members of this conference committee are requested to have a discussion, and this was news to me. So we'll be in recess here for a few minutes, but as I say, we will finish. We will be done one way or the other by 4.
About 20 minutes?
Okay. So we are in recess. Thank you. Okay. We will come back to order for the conference committee on Senate File 2082. We met with those folks that we've been alluding to at a higher pay grade. I won't tell you who, but we've been given a deadline to get our bill done by Monday evening, 10 o'clock. Now, again, because there's some issues where the Senate has no position, it appears what we're going to have to do is probably have a follow-on second bill dealing with some of the policy issues, some of the unresolved issues. Certainly the House has some positions. The Senate is trying to stake out some positions, but that will not be done in time. Representative Conn and I are just going to have to, you know, figure out which ones are going to do. But but the budget part absolutely has to be done. We've already agreed to some issues here. But just so that we're aware that is the deadline that we have been given. And we'll be further details will be forthcoming. We do need to finish up to get an idea of the budget areas here as we've been going through. There's no further discussion on finance. Office of Enterprise Technology, and again, we're going to be done by 4 o'clock, so I want to finish what we're doing here. So Mr. Lindeen or Ms. Roberts, could you tell us what the differences are here?
Okay. Taking a look at the Office of Technology on line 48, the governor did have $16.5 million in for the data center consolidation. And looking at the spreadsheet, neither the House or the Senate put any general fund dollars, but the House did appropriate $250,000 out of a special revenue fund for the pre-design of this project. And then moving down, the next item is the IT security agency chargeback. And if you take a look at the rider is on R7, but essentially what the Senate did was they took the general fund base for this particular program and cut half of it in the first year and then eliminated it in the second year and going out into the tails. And then with the idea, the writer in there talks about the chief information officer working with the commissioner of finance to come up with a cost recovery plan and a rate plan to charge out to state agencies. And then both the Senate and the House took the operating budget reduction that the governor recommended.
Members, you may have, you should have in your packets a letter from on April 30, 2009 from Mr. Khanna expressing his concerns about IT security cuts, the lack of funding for data center consolidations, and the House position on the pass-through for IT appropriations, which we talked about yesterday. But does OET want to be heard any further on any concerns or issues in that? Again, I know that you certainly want to get the data centers funded and so forth. We didn't do it here, but and we know what your position is, but did you want to talk about some of the differences and any approaches here? Mr. Lally, welcome back to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Lally, Office of Enterprise Technology. And let me say up front, we do understand the dilemma you face, and we're not asking for manna to fall from the skies or anything else like that. But when you're making your choices, we do want to make sure you understand also the implications of those choices that are wider spread than just the impact on OET. Mr. Boozy has spoken frequently and eloquently about the security situation in the state. You've seen the affirmation of that from the legislative audit report. I'm not going to go through all that again, but I would
we don't have time to be honest with you. So.
Right. You're intelligent people. You know what the facts are around that. The impact of what is proposed by the Senate, though, is significant for a number of reasons. First of all, not all agencies and bodies that we have to provide security for are financially positioned to be able to afford to pay on a rate basis for the security that is in the best interest of the enterprise for us to provide. That's the whole reason why it's a general fund operation in the first place, because if we open up areas of weakness in these, particularly the smaller organizations or the financially stressed organizations, they compromise the integrity of the whole system, and that's just the reality of it. So the reason why we put this in the general fund and why our highest priority for avoiding cuts this year has been to avoid cuts to security is simply it's unrecoverable. We've increased our exposure for however many years it takes us to recover the space that we're giving up in this whole process. The letter from Gopal Khanna, I think, covers that in greater detail than I want to take or you want me to take here. But please take seriously that is a significant problem for us to try to deal with in our budget area. The data center issues, we've talked about that. We will continue, as I mentioned the other day, the proposal about evaluating the impact of data center consolidation is something we're going to continue working on. This is not something we think is in the best interest of the state to put off, but if it has to be deferred, at least we'll do all of the ground research so that we are ready to make a decision when the opportunity presents itself. As to the rest of it, like every agency that's affected by the budget cuts, we're not happy with what it's going to do to our programming. We're not happy to do what it's going to do to our oversight, but you know the effect of the choices you're making. I hope you will reconsider the $100,000 pass-through. It's a non-value-adding proposition from our standpoint. We cannot do it. The burden of that will be incredible when it comes to processing accounting transactions. I hope you will reconsider that.
Could you, again, comment on the House's position on the $250,000 pre-design appropriation for bonding for the new data center facility? I've got Mr. Khanna's letter before me, but is there anything you want to add to that?
We are proceeding with the planning portion of what has to be done, the due diligence, if you will, around the data center consolidation, regardless of what direction it goes, whether it takes the direction of a state-owned facility or the leased facility that's contemplated in the governor's budget, some kind of a strategic partnership, any other kind of alternative. We're going to have to do that baseline analysis regardless. We're also going to try to proceed with the pre-design which we can take to a certain point with the help of the Department of Administration, but at some point we have to know where we're going and how we're going to get there. And our goal is to have all the information in place so when that decision is made, we are ready to react as quickly as possible to reduce our exposure.
Thank you. Representative Conn.
I'm a little surprised by one of the reasons that I'm interested in using bonding, as we've talked about this before, is that this is, you know, as other states have been able to do and we've been unable to do, they've been able to use bonding for information systems in general. And the only way we can use bonding for information systems is if they're combined with the construction of a new building, which is according to our bond council and in opposite direction from states just as such as Massachusetts, which use it regularly. I find that this line is a little surprising. This finding and building a new facility would take a minimum of 24 months from the time of legislative approval. If we could do the 35W bridge and consider it, which had much more riding on it, to use a bad cliche. You know, I'm surprised at doing this. Representative Solberg even found a building for you to put it into, and you know, why can't this be done on the design build aspect, and I'm most interested in the ability to put to do a lot of data, a lot of data machinery acquisition at the same time.
Mr. Lally.
Madam Chair, Representative Conn, there's about three questions in
yes.
this, so let me try to deal with them as best I can, and some of them are outside my area of expertise. My understanding has always been that our position has been that we can invest in technology that is a major component of a new facility. That doesn't mean anything that's going to run in it, but stuff that is required to run the facility that is bondable. That doesn't mean I can extend that, so you'll have to take that up with other folks. The second issue is about the ability to create a new data center in a very abbreviated period of time. And unlike a general office building, a standard facility, our requirements have to fit what we're going to be moving into that building. We can't, so the pre-design process can't be short-circuited. Otherwise, we'll be just buying a building and throwing some computers in it, and I promise you that does not work, and it's going to ultimately be more expensive. We can short-circuit the construction process by going to design-build. That will shave some time off it, but we're still talking about a period of time where we have to, assuming it's bonded, we have to let the bonds get the money, get the design done, award the contract, and build it, and then begin the process of migrating it. If you build a bridge, the bridge technology is, I know, complex. It's a different kind of technology than we're dealing with. But essentially, when the bridge is there, you drive over it. When the building is there, then our problems with migrating are many varieties of hardware and software into it. That's when those processes have to start. I would like to say we can short-circuit that, but how much we can short-circuit it prudently and still have it work right when we move into it, I just don't know. And our estimates, initially estimates from the Scipio company that are our experts on this, was it was 20 months from goal, you've got to go ahead to do it, to when you can be moved in and operating. And that was in a private sector environment. And frankly, we have other laws that govern our ability to react quickly to some of these things.
Okay.
That was the basis for our estimate.
Thank you.
And then,
Representative Conn.
And then, as we've discussed a few times, obviously that OET pass-through is not the correct language for this, but I'm very concerned about the lack of a centralized control of budget decisions on IT.
And this idea,
for example, that, well, as the agencies do their budget requests, you work with them and how to do it. But it's still... those end up still being done by various different divisions of the Appropriations Committee with various interests in the issue of technology. And I still think, you know, that obviously, giving reading what you've said about it, that's not the right way to have written it, but I really am interested in doing something that gives OET more control over the allocation of funds. And, you know, we've had discussion over the years about these things like the federal money that all got turned back from Health and Human Services, not turned back, wasted, and the project ended. And the answer was that, well, OET didn't have the control over the federal funds in the first place. So how can we fix that?
Mr. Lawley, very briefly, because I don't want to finish this.
No,
Mr. Lawley, just
put it on the table and not have it
answered. If he wants to respond, but do so briefly, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, we share your concern. As I testified, I think, before your committee earlier this year, what it takes to make oversight and the governance process and all of the pieces that give you the portfolio management you're talking about are people. It is not something you can automate very well. It takes people with skills to do it, and we don't have the people. It's simple as that.
Okay. I'm going to have to keep moving here. The next two items, campaign finance board and administrative hearings, are kind of interrelated because of the Senate's proposal. Mr. Lindeen, could you go through them?
Okay, yeah. Taking a look at line 53 on the campaign finance board, both the House and the...
I can short-circuit that. I think at one point that part was in the House bill, and we're not as fussy about having House positions as you are, and my guess is pending a discussion with my conferees, we would probably just accept the Senate position on that, taking
well,
it from the campaign.
Well, let's have Mr. Lindeen quickly describe it, and then if Mr. Goldsmith wants to comment, we'll have that opportunity to do so. Mr. Lindeen.
Okay. Okay, so basically we took the cuts that the governor recommended, and then an additional $100,000, $50,000 a year was included as an operating budget increase, and then we made some changes to the campaign public subsidy. We reduced it by $100,000, that covered the operating budget increase, and then we took the $130,000, which currently is a transfer from the statutory appropriation, and we just made that a direct appropriation to the Office of Administrative Hearings for the campaign complaints. And so that then brought down the appropriation of $1,250,000 to $1,020,000, and instead of doing that as a statutory appropriation, we did it as a direct appropriation and then just eliminated it in the tails.
And then the backside also has some references here that we need to talk about for campaign financing subsidy, or did you want to...
Yeah, that's essentially what are the changes made when we went from a statutory appropriation to a direct appropriation.
Mr. Goldsmith, welcome to the conference committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jerry Goldsmith. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you, and I'll be very brief. The board typically had 9 staff members. Due to wage and benefits pressures, that was decreased to 8.8 a couple of years ago. Our budget currently would support 8.5, but we know going forward that would not be possible, so we've left a 0.5 position empty. Actually, in fiscal 9, we'll be returning somewhere in the range of $10,000 to the general account by keeping that position empty. The board looked at the overall programs of public subsidy as well as the administration of those programs, which is the board's operating budget, and the board's position this year was that the legislature would be requested to look at both the public subsidy programs and the administration of those programs together and fund that administration sufficiently, even if it meant slightly decreasing the actual public subsidy payment. And so this $50,000 per year would come out of a payment that would previously go to the general account of the campaign finance of the public subsidy program. The board, of course, supports the Senate position. The House position was the same, except the House, in the original House language, left it as a statutory appropriation, and that would, of course, have left the tails in for the general account payment in the public subsidy program. This will allow the board to maintain 8 staff positions. It will also allow us to do this for not only this biennium, but for the next biennium, so I would not expect to come back to this body or to the individual bodies requesting additional funding in the next biennium. And 4 years from now, we'll see how things look. But the board is comfortable with the Senate position or the House position as it was originally stated.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Goldsmith? seeing none. Thank you, Mr. Goldsmith. The Revenue Department, we have an identical cut, and then we heard from the Commissioner yesterday on the tax compliance of the House has booked $7.5 million, which would generate $30 million in tax compliance. I don't know that we need to spend any further time on that. I think we've got the information that we heard correctly from the Commissioner yesterday. The CAP Board, we have identical reductions there. If turning back on the page 2, Indian Affairs Council, there is a difference there, and we need the House has some language here on the Indian burial sites and unfunded federal mandate. Perhaps we could get some discussion of what that's about.
Unfortunately, this part came from Mary Murphy's committee,
okay.
So we really, of which we have no members who serve on it.
Okay.
So we'll really have to get them.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay.
Did we have? Okay. Oh, Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, I also staffed that position this year, and the Representative Murphy's committee had some testimony about some mandated activities that the Indian Affairs Council actually carries out, duties relating to Indian burial sites when they are discovered, and so she and the committee believed that it was appropriate to add this extra funding.
Representative Holbrook, is that the situation up by, either Leech Lake or Winnie Lake, where there's they found a burial site that's waves and that are washing the burial site away. Is that what that's related to? Do you know?
Mr. Pepper?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I don't want to speak for Representative Murphy, but I think this was a more general concern. That might have been part of it, but
yeah.
I believe.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Shepard, I guess I'm a member of the Indian Affairs Council, and I think it represents multiple sites, Representative Solberg. It's not just a single site, but I think the one that you're referring to is included in the number they're looking at.
Continuing on, let's see, Black Minnesota Council, same cut. Chicano Latinos Affairs Council, the cut is the same. Asian Pacific Council, identical. The Amateur Sports Commission, we both restore the base restoration that we had cut previously, so that's the same. We've already done with the campaign finance subsidy. We've talked about that. Amateur Sports Commission, we talked already about eliminating the target center appropriation. Finance maps replacement, we've already dealt with that now. Revenue completion of integrated tax system. Now, the House has $4.2 million on that. I don't know whether we've talked quite about that yet. Have we gone through that yet? Ms. Roberts?
We did discuss it yesterday. This represents the lease payment.
Okay. The commissioner talked about that. Okay. And then the reductions, we've already talked about the agency reductions to the governor's office to fund the positions. The House has the position of reducing deputy assistant commissioners. The Senate has similar language in that Senate file 2 that came out of rules today. So as I look over, is there anything else we need that haven't touched on yet? Mr. Lindy.
Yeah, the only item that I neglected to touch on when we were talking about the state auditor's budget was, if you look on line 115, we're making a one-time transfer of $100 million out of the tax increment account in the state auditor's office.
$100 million?
$100 million would be helpful.
those commas can get you in trouble.
Yeah.
Attention.
Okay. Does anybody want to bring anything to the attention of the conference committee in the time that we have left, either the public or the members here? Come on forward.
I'm not sure I understand that tax increment account transfer that was not a House position.
Oh.
The Senate position.
The tax, which line are you on?
Yeah. The 115.
115. Okay. Well, we've got some testimony here. Maybe we can circle back in a minute. Welcome to the conference committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Sewell with Minnesota Association of Townships. I'll be very brief. I'm just referring back to the $130,000 appropriation for the campaign complaint. The rider language on page R8, I think that this appropriation is dealing with campaign complaints that the local governments are not stuck paying the bill for private disputes. And I just think that there might need to be a little bit of cleanup language, the rider language that was more comparable to what the House had prior to their floor sessions. And I know Mr. Shepard had worked with me on that language. along with Bruce Johnson, who is the ALJ who worked on that. So it's, I think, very easy rider language fix, but I just wanted to flag it for the committee's awareness.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, Representative Kahn, did you have a question on line 115?
Yes.
Okay. What
is it?
Mr. Lundine, could you clarify that again?
Okay, what the Senate's doing is making the transfer out of this account. This is the tax increment enforcement account in the state auditor's office, and it's funded by a deduction from tax increments that goes into this fund, and there is about an unobligated balance of slightly more than $2 million. And the spending out of there each year is about $1.3 million. And so what we're doing is out of that $2.5 million or so unobligated balances, we're making a transfer of $1 million to the general fund one time.
And we have
Also, I don't think I fully understand 113 and 114 either.
Okay. We'll back up to the 113 and 114 was the Senate's proposal to cut the repairs, which Commissioner Andrew, that was Mr. Fielding,
okay,
complained about the fact that we won't be able to fix anything. That was admin.
Right.
Yeah.
Admin. I thought that they were.
No.
My eyes are going.
Okay. The state auditor is back here again. Auditor Otto, welcome back. You have some comments on the fund transfer then?
Sure, Mr. Chair, members. For Representative Kahn, the Senate had asked us, could we sacrifice $1 million out of the TIF revenues, which are collected when TIF districts are set up? And we carefully examined our work and how much our workload is, and we thought there might be a bump in our workload. It didn't happen. So with some efficiencies that are built in, I think there's some language in the Senate side to help our office, that division of our office, do TIF. If we can get those efficiencies, we should be fine. And so if it helps you all, we're able to do it at this time once. Just one million.
Okay. Any questions?
$100 million sounded better. Right?
Well, any other questions, the state auditor?
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you, Auditor Otto. Okay. Again, is there anything else to come before the conference committee at this time? Is there anybody else who wants to bring anything to our attention? I don't see anybody coming to the table. So I think this concludes the work for today. As we pass the gavel, Representative Kahn, what's your intention?
I talked about meeting tomorrow night, but I'm not sure that that's all that useful. I think we're much better off thinking and looking at things and looking for how we can bring these things together. And so I would call the next meeting for, and watch your emails and your cell phones. I'd call it for a half an hour after the last session. On Monday.
Okay.
So you don't get to come. I know you're devastated by this, but you don't get to come back tomorrow night.
However, some of us will be kind of working on things over the weekend. Well, I think we can leave our stuff here. You can leave your things here.
Yeah.
Can we leave it here?
Yeah. Anything else to come to our attention? What do we have? Okay. If not, the meeting is adjourned. Have a good Sunday.